Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Zoli, so I actually want to bring up a certain point that I think for me has been always quite interesting. The issue of I'm taking days off for specific ceremonies that are authentically... I heard that. You know, because people don't understand that, okay, listen, if my brother just came from Waluga, you need to be there because, number one, I am his sister, and this is I'm an important part to play, and also to mentor him into this new state of his life. At a wedding, if somebody in your family gets married, you need to be there. Therefore, then you need to take days off work. But people don't understand, like, it's just a wedding. Why you got to take off work?
Yes, and it's like, you know, as a black person, you have to always, you know, it comes off like an elaborate story or line that you're spinning, you know. Like, why can't it be, I have to just be like, hey, I need to go to a wedding, and my boss is like, oh, yes, sure, you know? You know, same with my white fellow colleague, you know, would just be like, oh, I need to pick up the kids quickly. And it's like, yes, go ahead, you know, type of thing. But, you know, when it comes to you as a black person having to, you know, have all these elaborate family functions, you know, it always sounds like this elaborate story that you're trying to wove, and you know, you're just trying to get out of work somehow.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many things that I can actually list as things that, you know, you as your family, number one, they don't understand that, listen, I got to work, and that money that I send through every month, it's from this and I need to be here. But also, you know, that, you know, and your family knows that you also need to be a part of these very important moments, and there's what I'm looking for, but I can't find right now. But it's fine that you need to be there for, and it's hard to somewhat find a middle, you know, and feel like that you are fully represented, and at your work you don't have it, that, you know, having to attend these things isn't an excuse. It's a responsibility that you have put on yourself, and and it's something that you take pride in being a part of.
And you know, you don't have to feel guilty about it.
It's the guilt. Definitely.
You know, it's the guilt that stays with you, you know, thinking about, you know, what kind of perception am I creating?
Absolutely.
You know, they're probably just thinking, they, you know, typical black, you know, million excuses, you know, to get out of a work situation.
Absolutely.
So it's really unfortunate.
It really, really is. Lunati, what do you have to say? I heard you laughing there. Lunati, are you there? Yes, no, Lunati?
Can I jump in?
No, yes, go ahead, Snetama, please.
Okay. What you guys are talking about, I've noticed it's with family responsibility.
Yeah.
It is such a problem with companies, because you get probably like 3 days family responsibility leave.
Oh, yeah.
And now here you are, trying to go to your great-great-great-grandmother's funeral. And it's like, where do you want to go? and it's important, because you're like, actually, my mother's uncle has passed away, and yeah, I need to be there.
Exactly.
And there's things like that. So it's very hard to understand, of course, because we come from different backgrounds and cultural situations. So people are always dumbfounded when you're like, okay, I need to go to an extended relatives, you know, and it's important that I be there.
Absolutely.
So your manager has to, in a way, use their own discretion as to, do I give you this family responsibility?
Mm.
Also with sick leave, you'll find that an employee will go to a traditional healer.
Oh, yes.
And so they'll come back and they were like, okay, why haven't you been at work for 3 days?
Mm.
The person says, I have a traditional illness, and they leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly.
So now HR has to find out, what do you mean traditional illness? What's going on with you? And you're trying to get this person to explain, and they're like, listen, I have a traditional illness, and that's where I'm going to leave it, and I can't be at work for the next 3 months. And somehow the person expects...
Sinetemba, you still there? Oh, no. Lunati, are you still there? Lunati? No? I think the one thing I think that Sinetemba was trying to express that, number one, it starts with the fact that you now, I think it just as me as being a Xhosa woman, it's hard to express yourself in English, especially for things that are particularly Xhosa. And there's only one way to explain it, and that is in Xhosa. Now you have to go and type an email out in a different language, being English, and try to explain a very African and closer traditional custom, that a ritual, if you will, it doesn't make sense in English. And you're just like, okay, you know, it does. I know it doesn't make sense, but I'm trying to prove to you that this actually is a real thing, number one. And it's one of those things where you just can't win either way. So we're going to try and get Sinetemba as well as Zorisa still there. Zaliso as well. So we're going to try and get them back on the line. But it definitely is a very, very niche experience. I think that people of color really do experience. And you are welcome to be a part of the conversation in the last 12 minutes of it. On WhatsApp, you can find us 072-567-1567. You can also call us as well, 021-446-0567. And of course, Twitter as well, at Cape Talk as well. Lindsay, what do you have to say on this?
Well, I'm curious about the fact that the phone box is frozen. Maybe it's, you know,
it's a good thing, though.
The colonialists having a hand in it.
Lindsay,
you just never
know.
The reason I decided to start recording is because I didn't think anybody would believe me.
If we put in more black families out there, we're going to complete. It's going to become the East Side overnight.
Recordings of a landlord accused of crossing the line. Tonight, the former employee who says he stood up against racist remarks, and he's speaking only to ABC 6. Six on Your Side's Brooks Giroux has uncovered these cases before the Ohio Civil Rights Commission.
And he joins us now with what that employee claims he was forced to do. Brooks?
Well, his name is Jason Hick, and he blew the whistle on what he calls a culture of discrimination. Despite his former boss denying allegations, Jason says he was not allowed to rent or hire African Americans.
It wasn't a fluke. It wasn't a one-time thing that was said.
I need white tenants. That is my absolute stipulation.
Phone conversations now serve as evidence, and Jason Hick is the man behind the recordings, who went to the Ohio Civil Rights Commission about his boss.
From the very, very beginning, I knew exactly what I had to do.
Hick was working for Abbey Hill Realty and Management and owner Aram Gostanian. He helped maintain and get renters for dozens of properties. That is until Hick says Gostanian's offhanded comments became more concerning.
What made you decide to put your job on the line?
Because I just couldn't do the things that I was being instructed to do.
Stop hiring black people to do anything in my company. Not another one.
I mean, she did a great job claiming it. What can I tell you?
I don't want any more. No more. None. We are a racist company. That's going to be my logo.
What did you think?
I was scared.
These f***ing niggas are so ungrateful in Old Village.
Six on Your Side tried to speak with Gostanian, but he never came out of his office and referred us to his lawyer. Just hours ago, his lawyer said no thank you to an interview request. In case paperwork, the attorney explained, words are words, and his actions as a whole do not show discrimination.
If we put in more black families out there,
we're going to complete, it's going to become the East Side overnight.
Hick says he would change application names and meet with African-American tenants at night just to get them a place to stay.
This was a moral thing for you.
Absolutely it was. Absolutely. It's something that goes to deep in my core.
Hick and his lawyer plan to sue for wrongful termination. The Civil Rights Commission has already found probable cause for discrimination.
I'm certainly not going to stand by or be a part of, doing some of the things that were described in the tape.
I'm going to start on a campaign of getting rid of every black tenant out there, every single one.
Hick was fired from his job, and paperwork claims it was for poor work performance. The Ohio Attorney General is now pursuing the discrimination case. Gostanian maintains the recordings were taken out of context.
Context.
Looking at behavior in context. Now, whether he actually meant context, as I say it, I say the context is a system of racism, white supremacy.
Indeed, context of white supremacy. Context. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, March 16th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our weekly workplace racism forum. We encourage non-white people, black people in particular, to dial in. Share your experiences. If you have had triumphs where you have successfully neutralized racist attacks on the job, or they were trying to, you know, wrongfully accuse you of something or get you fired or written up, anything. If you were able to figure out a way to defuse that situation, if you were having conflict with other non-white people, other white people on the job, and you were able to stop that, we definitely need those type of situations in terms of what you did, what you said, to get those problems corrected. You should be one of the first folks to dial in. The number, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. That number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. We have lots to do. Hopefully we'll have participation. Lots of people wrote in situations, even some of the folks outside the state. So I'm going to challenge myself to see if I can get all of the written commentary included during the broadcast. So no dallying. I want to make sure I encourage folks, if you are a black entrepreneur, if you're self-employed, non-white, self-employed, period, dial in and let us know how being self-employed changes the way that you have to deal with whites when you are, quote unquote, working for yourself. And policy and procedure, always encourage folks, review your manual if anything stands out in policy and procedure, or even if you notice discrepancies. I think someone phoned in recently and they said that they observed a lot of whites on their job taking smoke breaks about every 45 minutes all throughout, you know, their 8-9 hour workday. And they said they looked at the manual, and it said very clearly that that is not allowed. You're only supposed to take smoke breaks during your designated breaks, like for lunch or whatever your designated times where you are authorized to be on leave. And that's it. You're not supposed to be leaving every 45 minutes. And I've seen that same sort of abuse throughout my work career. So I'd say just, you know, be aware of what is in that manual. It can be very helpful for your self-defense. Quickly, the audio that we heard at the beginning, the workplace racism segment from South Africa. That's Talk Radio 702 in South Africa. I played a little bit of that program last week, and it was lengthy. It was like an hour conversation. So I played a little bit more this week. Number one, as someone who also hosts a talk radio program discussing racism, I really appreciated the tech issues that they had, where somehow black people in South Africa talking about their experience with racism on the job. Now the phones aren't working and we keep losing people who want to talk about their experience having difficulty getting time away from work for whatever the case may be. If it's a holiday, if it's a wedding, if I need to attend to my children, where whites can call and say, oh, hey, I got to go get my kid at whatch and whatch, and, you know, no question, no interrogation, no problem. Take as much time as you need. Then you have phone difficulties. I, too, know that experience, the phone situation I'm talking about, where somehow there are all these tech issues once you begin talking about racism. That's one. The second piece, that was a white former employee who made these recordings. That was not a black person. I could be in error, but I looked at the video from that footage. That, to me, looked like someone who would be accepted, classified as white. I still would suspect him of being racist, and I suspect he is going to clean up in that suit. I have seen other times where a white person said that racism was being practiced. Now, sometimes they said it was, you know, what they call reverse racism, and a white person was mistreated and what have you. I've seen where generally those suits are very successful and they get lots of money. I have also seen where the white person will say, yes, racism was being practiced. This other white person was practicing racism, and either I called them out and said that they were racist, or what, I tried to do something about this and they, you know, retaliated and fired me or whatever it was. But the white person accusing another white person of being racist, the white accuser ends up getting a lot of money. I've seen that as well. And the white accuser, as I said, racist suspect as well. So yeah, but that's a case you might want to keep an eye on just to see how all of that is resolved. If anything, I have encouraged folks to practice what you might say on a job. Like if you have lines that you want to get, like code, this is my code, what to say if a race soldier touches me. Unwanted touching, this is exactly what I say every time, and this is the tone I want to say it. It also might be a good idea to practice with your recording device, whatever you have. If you buy one of the new gadgets that's coming out, they got the South by Southwest this week, right down in Austin, Texas. One of the new gadgets that they got, all kinds of stuff that you can record. Whatever you're going to use, practice with it so that you quickly, you're not fumbling around and looking awkward and trying to get it. Practice with it where you keep it in the same spot. That's part of having a code. If you, you know, it's, I know I'm going to keep my recording device if it's going to be something that I use on my watch, because they got those too. All right, I'll give, you know, a few practice shots so I know how to do it and I'm not awkward. I can do it real natural and get it on quickly once I see that things have gone tacky or just something that I think I want for my audio record. Practice being able to get to your recording device as quickly as possible, because as you heard from that clip, that can end up being very, very important. It's rare, some of the blatant things that were being said in that audio recording, it's rare that you're going to get stuff that flagrant. But just practice with your recording device. With that, I will begin to get to some of the emails. There are a plethora as I'm migrating to my email. I will waste 30 seconds because the weather was horrible here, and I did read about that, and folks, different people, I think retired firefighter and princess called in to gloat about being in Florida in places where it's very warm and 80 degrees and having pineapple. Well, while you all have had the nor'easter blizzard this week, it has been downright balmy in the Seattle area. It was almost 60 degrees yesterday. It was a repeat today. I spent the bulk of today outside playing with non-white children. I went and then sat by myself to prepare, organize for the program. I had my feet propped up in the sun. It was great. Bundle up is all I can say if you had to go through any of the nastiness from this past week. Now, people wrote in for workplace racism. Number one, we had a black female. She shared last week about having difficulties with her white overseer, race soldier, on the job. And she said she figured out ways to minimize having contact with him. So I asked if she could share some of the techniques that she uses to minimize contact. So she wrote in quite a bit. Here we go. She said, I work in case management for the sick and poor people in the Bay Area of California. Woo-woo, Bay Area, 415. I have a flexible schedule, and depending on the tasks of the day, there is opportunity for me to meet with clients in their homes or at a coffee shop. My manager is a white racist male. I say that he is racist male based on numerous examples of him practicing racism, one being saying that he admires Thomas Jefferson, K. cowbell, Patrick Henry, and that he was a feminist. One day I noticed my cubicle was in direct line to his desk office, and he was always looking at me, making faces and doing meaningless gestures when I look up. But there was a bookshelf that was between us. So one morning I arrived early before everyone else and moved the bookshelf so that the books blocked his view of me. I also wanted to state that the majority of the males at the job are homosexuals, that is very Bay Area, who constantly try to consume all of my energy with endless theatrical nonsense that has nothing to do with work. I'm just pausing because this has been on my mind so much. Vincent Woodard's The Delectable Negro, when he talked about on the plantation how racist enslavers like Thomas Jefferson, they would consume the psychic energy, and he was talking about of black females specifically, that really stuck with me because I feel like that is a huge aspect of racism that doesn't get discussed, where white, and it seems like it comes up on the workplace all the time, where whites, they will come in and just talk about nothing and demand that you give them it's like a very aggressive, I would say a violent form of attention seeking. Like if you don't stop everything that you're doing and look at me and laugh or comfort me or just give me your psychic energy, there's going to be a problem. Maybe you're not a team player. Maybe you don't deserve to have this job. Sorry for the pause. Continuing. My racist boss hangs out at my cubicle showing me his new t-shirt or pictures of his family. At times, the non-white, non-black Filipino female would join the conversation, but most of the time I would be caught off guard. Thanks to listening to the cows, I've learned the benefit of having my headphones on. This is one technique I use that has cut his aggression towards me by more than half. Wow, just headphones. Another strategy that has worked for me is leaving the office to visit my clients. Walking takes up more time and keeps me out of the office on average of 3 days a week. The last strategy I have incorporated daily is when I am in the office, I book a counseling room not only to meet clients but to do my administrative tasks, thus keeping away from my work area and the racist. That brilliant, brilliant. Lastly, I wanted to mention that now I only have to communicate with him during supervision, which lasts 30 minutes once a week. Supervision has been in the past a place for him to go on and on about his family, politics, etc. Nothingness. He would keep this up for an hour talking about politics, his favorite songs and videos, while white people always waste black people's time. I've been able to stop some of this fake supervision by booking a client 30 minutes after we start, so I have to leave. Brilliant. Workplace racism and the experiences that people have shared on this program have been extremely helpful in navigating through life on the plantation. I've realized that I cannot ever become comfortable and or relaxed until racism ends and is replaced with a system of justice. Amen, Ashe. I can just add, that is brilliant. That's exactly the way, the type of functioning that you want to have on the job. Just getting, these are things that you can do to solve the problem, to minimize the opportunity for racists to mistreat you. Brilliant. Moving right along. Okay. Lots of people wrote in this week. Let's see. Woo. All right. Number one, I hope my last correspondence did not seem to be anti-black. I wrote about my wife's situation, and she was corrected by her black female principal. The correction took place over an elementary recital, which my wife encouraged the class of black children to raise their fist prior to the ovation. The fear was that some white female faculty may be upset by the gesture. Sure enough, the principal was berated with concerns that my wife was starting trouble. Without fail, she was asked to resign. After a decade as an elementary educator, even when you are in charge, it seems white subordinates continue to make the rules. Man, I am so sorry to hear that. Man, that's horrible. But this happens all the time. If folks remember, it was a black female teacher in New Jersey. I think it was, I'm not going to attempt to say her name because she had it was a unique name. I think it started with a Z. But it was in New Jersey. I think this was 2000, 2014-2015, she was teaching her students about Mumia Abu-Jamal. I think they wrote him letters. That was what it was. He was having some of his health complications, and she thought it would be cool if they wrote him a letter, and they did this, and the same thing. The parents flipped out. What are you doing writing this, you know, convicted nigger cop killer? And same thing. They got her fired. The only thing I can say, if you're a black person, that last sentence doesn't matter what your position is, how, if you are quote unquote in charge, no racist man, racist woman, racist child, they are in charge. And keeping that in mind at all times, anything like, I think I would even relate that to when the person called in a while back, I think when we first started Workplace Racism on Thursdays, and a person asked about wearing like a Nat Turner shirt to work. And I just said, you know, what problem are you trying to solve? That seems like something that might create more problems than it solves. Very important to keep that sort of thing in mind on the job. Next person. had to read past their Get Out commentary to get to workplace racism. Okay, next folks. This is about a black male's experience starting a new job. My husband started a new job recently. He was offered a position in a grocery store that was opening up its first store on our side of town. To be clear, our area is predominantly non-white, black, but due to gentrification, aka racial dislocation, the income level has increased enough to warrant opening an organic market in the eyes of the retailer. The interview process was unlike anything he had seen before. There were hundreds of people who were called in for the interviews, and they were all black. This was very refreshing to him, as it debunked any misconception that black people have no desire to work. Not surprisingly, the interviewers were mostly, if not all, white. My husband was offered a position the same day he interviewed. Despite applying for part-time work, not a lot of employers hire full-time anymore. They brought him and another young black male in as full-time employees in their department. My husband and the other young black male hit it off despite their difference in age. They got along well enough that my husband began offering to give him rides to orientation and training. This was rather convenient for them, as the young male lived close to us, and unbeknownst to them, training would take place at multiple stores all across town, sometimes starting at 6 a.m. In order to get from our side of town to many of the stores uptown for training, they would have to leave at 4:30 to 5 a.m. in the morning. Fortunately, we own a vehicle, but many of the young people working there do not. While they would have had no problem getting to work at their designated store, getting to training at 6 a.m. with no bus, train, transportation to some stores in either Maryland or Virginia with no real metro access was nearly impossible. My husband saw many of his prospective co-workers being let go because they were late to work. It was unfortunate to us because they were never told that training would be taking place at all these various stores all over the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area at hours where no metro was available. Fortunately, my husband could help by giving a ride to the gentleman close to us and rides to metro to some of the other guys, but many still found it difficult to commute. Interestingly enough, my husband's white supervisor found out he was giving rides to the guys when he could, and he started splitting up my husband and his remaining co-workers' shifts so that they do not even overlap, making it impossible to give them rides to or from work. Remember what I said about never giving whites the benefit of the doubt for this type of behavior that just somehow results in black people being harmed? Continuing, additionally, while my husband and I planned to work around any schedule he was given, the supervisor made it a point to give him virtually the exact opposite of his preference, which was requested based on our son's school and my work schedule. Fortunately, I am a salary employee at my job and have been with my employer for a number of years, and they are quite flexible with me in working from home or taking time off so we can make his schedule work. But I don't know what we would do if I was on an if I was an hourly employee or a new employee somewhere else. While none of this should have been surprising to us, it did make us realize how difficult this system makes it for many black families who need two incomes or have school-age children they need to care for. I'm sure his department and supervisor are not the only ones who offered the exact opposite schedules for their black employees during this probationary period, so I am sure he will see many more employees being let go as the 60 days goes on. We just wanted to share this as it serves as a reminder that even when black families are trying to be what white people deem us as being good, hardworking, taxpaying families, they make it nearly impossible for it to be sustainable. I'm sure there will be more things to share as time progresses. He has already experienced the so-called liberal white women coming into the meat department he works in and specifically asking him for the black forest ham. Seems like a cowbell. While the male counterpart chimes in with, "She really likes the black one, definitely a cowbell," and snickering, or the white women that come in and make the Latino guys help her so she can practice her Spanish, despite the fact that the guys speak perfect English. But there will be much, much more to come. Thank you for letting us share. Wowee. And the importance of just being observant to things like that. White women are super dangerous. All of us should make sure we develop our code for how we're going to neutralize situations like that when we see that this is kind of heading in the direction of something tacky and sexual, molesting, or even if it's just verbal, having your code about what to say, how to minimize those type of situations. Number again is 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I did not even really make a dent in the number of folks who wrote in commentary for workplace racism, so that's what I'll be doing, looks like, for the most of this program, when I comment, just reading emails. And you can feel free, anyone, if you are listening, you can add to the list. If you are not able to communicate via phone, you can write in untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. And we can share anonymously if you're not in a position to speak with us via phone. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free to chime in. All of the folks who have a hand up, line should be open. We can hear you, ma'am. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I wanted to comment on my workplace racism. So last week, I think I called in and I said that the housekeeper and front desk representative had gotten suspended or fired for staying in the hotel. So she had a check that came for her, I guess her income tax check, the housekeeper. So when I got in, I saw it. And somebody said, "Well, I tried to call her, but she didn't answer." I was like, "I wouldn't answer either. Did you tell her? Did you text her what it was?" And so they had it in the send back mail, in the outgoing mail pile. So I took it out and put it in the pile, in the mail where the guest mail goes. And I ended up texting her and told her she had a check, she should come get it. So then, like maybe 5:30 the next morning, she came and got it, and she was telling me that they had kind of set her up to do that like that, which I figured, you know, what because I say it like that because they could have let her know that she was going to get fired. I mean, they could have just said, hey, this, that, or the other versus setting her up to kick her out at like midnight. But anyway, over the weekend, I worked another location, a more white location in San Rafael, California. And they had an acid rock, maybe, like, concert in the area, and they had reservations, some guys to come stay. So they get there, and one guy's key didn't work. And, no, his key worked, but he couldn't get it. The room he went to wasn't hit. I guess it was dirty. I don't know. I guess they didn't clean the room or something. So he comes back down as I'm checking another guest in. The room is dirty. Somebody's in there or something, but that's not, that somebody's in there. And I was like, okay, well, I'll deal with it. And mind you, this is not my store, so I don't know that. And these keys were already pre-made. So I checked the other guy in, and they're talking and stuff. You know how they like to take your time up. So they're talking and talking about whatever. That's how I know it was a rock concert. So I get him squared off, the guy in front of me, and then the guy, I just need another room or something. And just clean our room. It's like, okay, just hold on. I said, just give me another room. And I'm just like, oh. So I type him another key. I gave it to him. Back out. And then he comes back down. You're doing a good job. You're doing a good job, because I'm very stern visually, so I don't know what that feels like on the opposite side. So anyway, these jerks are up there making all kind of noise. So now the tenants around them are calling. So I say, okay, well I'll call and check on them. So I call and check on them. Okay, we'll be quiet. And then they're back at it again. So I go up there and they're loud and just loud and wild. So I call back up and say, you know, can you please be quiet? You're disturbing other people that then you have a party. Well, I don't consider five people in the room a party. I mean, but, you know, you just jerk. So then after the last time, I was like, could you just go to bed? Because the people are complaining. Could you just go to bed? Okay, we'll go to bed. So there were no more complaints. But in the morning, a little old man came down and said, were you working last night? And I said, yeah. Oh, those people. I said, oh, you were in whatever room? And then he said, yeah, I was in that room. And those people, they were so loud. I was like, yeah, I kept calling and so forth. Yeah, it was a rock concert. You know how that is. So then he's just looking. And he's like, yeah, you sure checked them out. Well, they'll be checking out, so you'll be okay. So then he comes back. Do you know where the bathroom is? Now, mind you, we have a room there, but I guess he wanted the one down there. So I remember seeing one, so I took him to it. So he wants to tell me how he used to teach in Richmond on the way. So he's talking and talking, and then he says, yeah, I had a top band, and I had a black guy, Terrence Smith. Black is midnight. And I say, Terrence, you know, because he'd be late. It's always late. So I say, Terrence, get your black ass to class. Terrence. And then he just kept repeating it. And then I just looked at him because just listening. And he said, you know, but I loved him, you know. I loved him. So I would do that. And, you know, I loved him. I said, so did it work? Yeah, it worked. Yeah, that's that squirrels. Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, I loved them. So, yeah. Okay, I'm going to go in the bathroom now. So that's when he went in the bathroom and I went on back so I can get up out of there. But, yeah, that's my workplace racism. Thank you.
Doesn't get any better than tacky. That, and again, wasting energy, the psychic energy, just demanding that you listen to these, you know, little racist anecdotes, from their life. I think the way that you handled it, asking questions, I say that all the time, stay in the question lane. If you just take the approach of not even saying anything, you said you did that for a while too. Just sit here and listen while he's, you know, saying all of his racist spiel. That's fine too. And then I think also the people who say, hey,
I just interrupt. Excuse me, sir, I can, you know, help you get to the restroom or whatever you need, but, you know, I'm not interested in hearing any of that right now. Thank you, sir. I've heard people who take that. I know Mr. Williams takes it once they start and it starts being tacky and they're cursing and all that. Because you're a black, eh? Excuse me, sir. I don't. This is my workplace. I try to conduct myself in a professional manner. I'm not interested in hearing that right now. I'm going to help you get what you need and get you taken care of, sir. A lot of different options for how you want to deal with that. Folks can kind of select. And just again, the danger. I don't know if they were drinking, but knowing whites how I do in the Bay Area, I suspect some alcohol could have been involved with all of this racket making at night. Any job where you might have to deal with intoxicated white, and I think you talked about dealing with drunk white people before, that's an added workplace hazard. If you know you're going to have to, you know, manage or deal with white people that are under the influence, coming and asking you for things or bothering you about things, that definitely should be thought of in advance before you take that job, because that's a whole extra layer of stress and danger. Could be fatal. Other folks, either if you have commentary, questions on what you just heard that our mom in the Bay Area, or if you have your own incident that you want to speak to, feel free. Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, everybody. This is a mortgage guy, mortgage banker in Virginia. I had sent Gus an email a little bit earlier, so I'll just kind of just go right into it. I had to go to Southern Virginia today for a meeting, and, anybody that has listened to this program before, I've been on a couple of times, but everybody I work with is all white, every single person. And, so I'm headed from this meeting and I get a text maybe around like noon while I'm sitting in this meeting, and it was something I couldn't see. And so I open up the text as I get on the road and I'm driving back to my other office. And it was a meme of a racist joke. And basically what it was that it had a basketball team in a picture. And the majority of the players either were white or light-skinned, and then it had five really, really dark guys, and you could barely see their faces. And I think the joke was like, I still haven't opened up all my players yet. And if anybody's ever played like a 2K game or have kids that play 2 game, you will immediately get it. It's a racist joke. And so I'm looking at my phone, and, you know, the only thing that kind of went into my mind was who sent me this, because now that I've become less confused and I really don't even deal with a lot of anti-blackness, none of my quote-unquote friends or associates would send me that. And so I wanted to know who sent it. But then I said, you know what? Let me just do a little experiment. So with the person that texted me the number, and also I got a new phone. So the person that texted me the image of the racist joke, I said to this individual, it was a statement. I said, do you have more of these? And he said, jokes? And I said back on the text, yes. And he said, oh, yes, I have tons of these. So then I'm sitting there saying, oh, huh, very interesting. And then my brain starts to go into, well, did he mean to send this to me? But then my brain went back to when I was less confused and I might have been making a fool of myself, like he probably thought I would laugh at this too. And so there was a little, a really low level of self-respect that I had for it, just a brief moment. But then I asked the individual, what's your email? And, you know, after maybe 20 minutes of me driving on the road, he shares his email, and he says, oh, do you have some that you would like to share with me as well? So at this particular point, I had to go in my email because I didn't know who it was, because mind you, I have a brand new phone, and I found out who it was. And I was like, this is a white guy. He was just practicing racism, and he probably didn't mean to send this to me, and he probably, because these people send a lot of group texts and stuff like that, but as I had emailed Gus immediately today after I got it and after everything went down, it was my first real, and this is just personal for me, so you guys might think I'm crazy, it was my first real experience of saying, okay, are you going to show some level of black self-respect? Because I didn't want to ignore it. So I just talked to my girlfriend about it a little bit, and we were kind of going back and forth. And I said, well, I want to respond, you know, accurately and correctly. And we were going through, like, certain words and terms because of the cows, because of Gus, Thomas, and Roz, and everybody that helps. And I said, I wanted to say racist. And she says, well, you know, if you say racist, he's going to identify it immediately. And I said, I want to identify it as that. I don't want to identify it as anything else other than what it is. And I said, if this was a group text, that means there's 30 other people that have been passing this around. So I just responded to the gentleman after he said, do you want to share something with me? I simply said, I didn't find this funny at all. Can you please remove me from any group or individual racist jokes or texts that you may send in the future? Thank you. And that was it. And I was very proud of myself, simply because not only that I responded, but that I had a certain level of self-respect that I could tell you 3 or 4 years ago, I probably would have giggled and said funny, because I might have been one of those people that didn't have the amount of self-respect to even say anything back. This individual that sent me that was somebody that wanted me to possibly do a mortgage for their children when they would get married a couple of years ago. And I'm not worried about repercussions. He and I don't do any business. There are no repercussions. There probably will be some repercussions. He might badmouth me or something of that nature, but I'm just happy that I was able to say something to this individual, and have the courage to do so. I know many people on this call may do it frequently, but in that particular instance, it was a pretty big moment for me, based upon my previous behavior. One other thing I didn't want to mention is that listen to the archives. I know I talk a lot. I listened to the archives from the woman last week that is a pastor. My father is a pastor. Workplace racism. He works for a company that is a majority white pastors, and that same behavior that she exhibited in a little just attackiness and confusion, I see that a lot, a ton on my dad's job and how he has had to deal with white people. He's a little bit less confused, but just over the years, just this whole level of workplace and using Christianity as a crutch, but then not really want to be accurate about racism. Gus had somebody else a couple years ago that my father, I sent him a picture of the broadcast. My dad knows him very, very well. Can't remember, the guy was talking about Indians or something like that. It was a while ago. And that's when I think firefighter had asked him for the compensatory request for the laptop. And he said he had to think about it. Same thing as this racist white woman did last week. So that's what I wanted to share, and I appreciate the show, and it's been very, very helpful in how I communicate with my children, but also trying to develop Black self-respect for myself. Thank you.
Right on. Awesome to hear that. Black self-respect, having Black self-respect on the job can be very challenging, but I think it's critically important, and that's great if you can, you know, see the growth within yourself from, you know, how you would have responded to that some years back, maybe when you didn't understand racism, white supremacy in the way that you do now, and how you responded today. That is spectacular. And you have options too. I think that's always important in terms of how you want to respond. I think to the previous, when our Black mother in the Bay Area, when she was talking about the situation on her job and this guy spewing all of his racist stuff about, oh, I helped this Black guy, told him to get his Black behind, blah, blah, blah. You got a lot of different ways that you can respond to that. Same way with this racist joke. And I think this might have been one, because I don't think we often get racist jokes on the job, but particularly in this age, it's probably going to be more of that. People sending these type of memes and different images and what have you. It's a lot of ways you can respond to that. Some people, I've said before, some people save, screenshot, see if you can identify as much identifying information as possible, if you can track down who sent this. And just confirm that, yes, such and such sent this, and save all that identifying information. That can be just something that you put in your folder, which I would do anyway, to just save, because who knows what could happen as we move down the road. As you said, if this went out to 30 or so people, then that means there could be lots of people that you're working with on a regular basis, which we suspect anyway, but lots of people that are engaged in this sort of behavior thinking, I would just document, save that, because who knows what could come up. Or you could just, oh yeah, I remember when, you know, Ted was sending these racist emails. Remember, he confirmed, I got the date here on March 16th. It was right when the NCAA tournament started, had our bracket and everything, but Ted here, he said he was sending these jokes, and in fact, I got the message where he said he had a lot more of these. That could be useful information. So I would file it away. And then in terms of how people deal with this sort of thing on the job, because I suspect if it's not rampant, it's going to be, with just technology being what it is. Just figure out, do I want to save? Do I want to challenge, as we just heard from the broker, to just say, hey, this is totally unacceptable. And, you know, make sure you do not ever forward to anything like this to me again. And I might, you know, be speaking to someone about this, because I don't think this is appropriate conduct for the workplace. I'm always an advocate for being in the question lane. Do you think this is appropriate for the workplace? Do you think this is the sort of thing that a racist would send? That's a good question you can ask, too. Lots of different ways you can, you know, respond. We all have our own individual code, but anything operating out of black self-respect, awesome, I think is a great way to go. Any of our listeners have any thoughts, comments, anything they want to share on what they just heard? Or if not, we can move forward. Anyone have commentary on how he dealt with this situation?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I think his code was brilliant. I thought it was really great. The only caveat was what you just said, is I would save that bad boy, because if he's spreading those kind of jokes, more than likely he's going to put himself in a quandary down the road because he's a racist. So absolutely, that's the only thing I would add to it, is exactly what you said. Basically, hold that down, keep that in your file, because you might have an issue with him down the road. And, you know, in case it gets personal and he tries to basically come at you directly rather than it being some stupid racist joke that he's sending to 30 people, you have that. You have how you address the situation there. And if there's anything else that comes up from him, potentially accumulate that information. Other than that, big up. Big up for black self-respect. Props on that all day. And I wanted to chime in on the one you read, Gus. About the black female whose husband was helping the other black male as far as giving them rides. I think that is one of the greatest examples of how white people are at war with us. And you would think that in a situation where they're doing these things where the hours are crazy and things like that, if you had an employee that was able to and took the time out of their own schedule to help other employees get to and from work, you would think that's something that would be lauded. But because he's black and we're not supposed to have black self-respect, that's the first thing that they destroyed when they encountered us and conquered us, was that. So I think that that is a great example of the fact that they're waging war against us. And whenever black people are in a situation where they are practicing black self-respect by assisting other black people, you should have a code where the black people that you're helping do not discuss what you're doing around anyone else. You keep it amongst yourselves. You keep it almost like a little secret society, because sometimes you have black people that are very very courteous and very thankful, so they might go and tell other coworkers, oh, so-and-so actually gave me a ride. Don't do that. Let's keep it all between us. That way, the enemy doesn't find out, and they can't make any or start any machinations on destroying that black self-respect. I thought that was brilliant. Big up to the black male who did that as well, even though they tried to thwart it. And then beyond thwarting it, they even tried to destroy him, too, by changing his schedule to the complete opposite of what he requested. So, I mean, that is one of the greatest examples of the war that's being waged on us by white people. And he didn't have to do anything but exhibit a little bit of black self-respect. And there it all went to, you know, just went south from there as far as his him being basically mistreated via his schedule. And then the whole group of people he was helping also being mistreated by them changing their shifts and sending them to places where they knew they couldn't make it. So I have my own workplace story, but I'll give someone else a chance to chime in on those discussions. Thank you. And hopefully I'll get to chime in later.
For sure. Anybody else have commentary they want to share? The broker, Virginia broker, we just heard from, this racist image. And if anyone is interested, if you want to see the image that he was talking about, I posted it on Facebook and on my Facebook page. and on just tweeted it as well, so you can see the image, what he was talking about, where you still got to unlock. It might be one of those visual things where you just got to see the racism of it to get what he's talking about. But Facebook page, and it's on our Twitter page. Anybody else have comments on that? They wanted to comment on what we just heard, how he dealt with that, or thoughts, suggestions about that, or if you had your own situation you wanted to address, that's fine as well.
If you want, I could give my story now since no one's chiming in yet. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, thank you, Gus. I appreciate that. Yeah, actually, last week I meant to talk about this, but I totally forgot. We had something called shadowing in my company where we'll have people from other departments basically sit with the people in my department to see how the things that they do on the back end affect us as the customer-facing department as far as us doing account management and stuff like that. And she was actually a young Chinese woman who sat with me. And while she was there, she was listening to calls, asking questions about different things, asking me how I did certain processes, and I was explaining that stuff. So then eventually she just started telling me about herself, and she was telling me about the fact that she lived in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, and we just started talking about the history of Fort Greene. I said, hey, I used to, you know, go to school there. It's very close to where I grew up, so it's basically one of my stomping grounds. So as we got into the history of Fort Greene, I started to give her the history of the Black history of Fort Greene, which was that Spike Lee's family was the first family to move there. And he talked about a couple of years after he went there, it was all white. And this was like in the 60s when he moved there. And after he moved in, he said about 1 to 2 years later, another Black family, which was the second Black family, moved there. And that's when white flight started. So she started asking me questions about like how things developed there. And I said, well, hey, you know, once the Black people moved into that area, then all the money was taken out of Fort Greene. Fort Greene became a very dangerous place to live simply because it was impoverished due to, you know, the white power structure taking that money out of that area. And then I also explained to her that once Spike Lee became famous, his house was the first house in Fort Greene to sell for over $1 million. And that also attracted white people back to the area, which is now gentrified again. And I said, well, now that the white people have taken over again, the area is just full of money. You know, they're building and they're, you know, adding all of this stuff and all of these quality food centers and all of this stuff is in Fort Greene that was never there when I was growing up. And she was like, wow. She said, I had no idea. I said, well, that's how, you know, I told her, I said, well, that's how gentrification works. Essentially, historically, you can study any historically Black area. When it becomes gentrified, the fact that the money moves in when the white folks move in, and when the white folks move out, the money moves out with them, and the people who are left there are impoverished. And as of course, as a byproduct, poverty breeds crime. So I found that to be very interesting. And just her response to that discussion was just phenomenal, just because she was so interested in hearing the history of that area where she lived and how it came to be what it was. So that was one situation, and that happened. I meant to discuss that last Thursday, but I totally forgot. And then today I had an evil white witch who I was helping on a phone call. She called in and she was asking me questions about her account, and she was asking me questions about her her billing. So I had to explain to her what a deductible is. I work for a health insurance company, and what a maximum out of pocket is. So essentially, a deductible is the amount that any member for any insurance company has to pay out of pocket before the insurance company will start to pay on their claims. Once they meet that amount, then they start what's called cost sharing. So cost sharing is where the company will pay a portion of the bill and the member will pay a portion of the bill. And basically, the portion that the member pays is deducted from their maximum out of pocket until they meet that amount. And once they meet that amount, they no longer pay on any claims as long as the doctor that they see is in our network. If they go to an out-of-network provider, we don't provide out-of-network benefits. So I went through that explanation. The idiot white broad had no concept of how that works. So she's like, I'm confused. I said, well, your brain's not functioning. You're just not, you have no common sense if you're not understanding a simple explanation like that. And she was nasty. So at one point, she actually says to me that she felt like, as she was asking me, she asked me when did she meet her deductible, if she met her deductible, and where it was. But she didn't give me a chance to actually get to the screen
where I could give her that information. So I explained to her as I was waiting for the screens to change, I said, well, you also have access to that information yourself. When you sign into your online portal, you know, if you click on the benefits and ID card link, it'll actually take you to what your deductible is, whether or not you've met it, and if you haven't met it, how much you have left before you meet your deductible. And the same thing with both for your maximum out of pocket. You can find it all in the same place. So as I'm explaining this, she cuts me off and she says, well, I feel like you're not being helpful. And I said, so I just said, let me shut this down right here. I said, well, ma'am, in what way do you think that I'm not being helpful? Because you've asked me questions. I've answered each of your questions. I've given you as much detail as possible. And then she cuts me off and she says, well, you didn't give me any information about my deductible. I said, well, I was going to that screen. I did not have the opportunity to get to the screen to give you that information before you chimed in that I wasn't helping you. And at that point, I started to give her the details of her deductible. And I told her she met it already. Then she asked me, well, what claims that I paid on contributed to my deductible. So I went through that history and gave her the dates, the amount that was paid towards the deductible, et cetera. And then I gave her the information regarding the maximum out of pocket because she was nowhere near meeting that, which was about $4,000. She'd only met about maybe $775 of that. So I explained that history to her. And then from there, she seemed to have gotten a little bit more courteous, but at that point I was just through with her anyway. Besides, she's white, I can't stand dealing with them anyway. So I gave her exactly what she wanted, and then I just ushered her off the phone. But it just goes to show, these white people are ignorant sometimes. They don't know what they're talking about. They're racist, and in their racism they're impatient. And it's so nauseating when you deal with these Archie Bunker type white people who just, you know, they call and they have this preconceived notion about who and what you are, and then if you don't do things fast enough for them, i.e. the plantation, if you don't do what Master says fast enough, you're not being helpful. So essentially, I gave her what she wanted and ushered her pale behind off the phone as quickly as possible. And I just like the way I handled that, in the sense that I just shut down her nonsense and let her know that you need to wait for the computer to do its job so I can then do my job. So shut up and just wait for me to give you that information. Thank you so much, Gus. I love the show. I love what you do. I love hearing the stories of the other callers because it helps me expand my consciousness. And I thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of the program. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. That phone situation, that, I mean, takes a lot of pay. And those type of jobs, you just got to automatically assume that you're being recorded. So I am sure anytime that they feel like, oh, my gosh, she's being so nasty, this white woman, you really got to be codified on how you go about doing your business. For any of the folks who do any sort of business over the phone, where you're having to handle calls in that same call center work, anything. Like, man, the importance of codification, where, and I would even suspect tone, because that's one I would, I'm sure, where they might listen in and, you know, I don't like your tone or the way that you sounded when you talk to that person. Like, really the importance of just being codified, watching how you sound, what you say, and dealing with all of the tackiness that they bring with them on the phone.
Hey, Gus, you know what you said makes perfect sense. Excuse me for interjecting. That makes perfect sense. And the good part about the industry I'm in is that we tend to deal with quite a bit of racists that call in. They're always yelling about Obamacare and Hillary and Obamacare. And we also get a lot of lunatic white people who really have no concept of what insurance is or how it works. So they act out quite regularly. So if there are situations that might arise where you have to be assertive, you're not penalized for being assertive. Whereas in other jobs that I've had, you really have to come at things totally different, because that person might try to escalate calls and say that you did something you didn't do. And thank goodness they record every call. So that way, if they pull the call, as long as you're doing everything as far as the legal aspect, you haven't broken any laws as far as privacy, and as long as any pushback that you're giving has to do with you giving them the best care and the best information, then that sort of situation is kind of nixed from the door, which is a good part, because in other places I've worked, you're absolutely correct. And I'm still conscious of that even here, regardless. I like to do that anyway, so you're absolutely correct about that as far as tone and the way that you're presenting information to people. So that way, even if you have to be assertive and they pull that call, they can say, well, yes, this person was not being, you know, the nicest person to deal with on the phone, but you still handled them correctly. You gave them the right information and you basically got them off the phone. So I would definitely mirror what you said. That is absolutely of very, 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 very important. I would say thank you. And I'll meet my line.
For sure. Might be a good idea in this state, just the technology is advancing. If we have anybody who attended South by Southwest, that would be I would be interested in getting a report. If you have field notes or if you did a vlog or anything like that, I'd be interested. But the technology is advancing so rapidly, it might be a good idea to just assume that you're being recorded anyway on a job, regardless of how much time you spend on the phone, to just keep that in mind in your work environment, wherever you work at. Just keep that in mind. I am going to get through all of these written commentaries. The next one before we get to other callers. Greetings. On my job, I work at a gemstone lab. Every once in a while, there are mandatory company policy quizzes that employees have to complete in a certain allotted time. This past week, the new piece of policy is conflicts of interest. The quiz is supposed to take employees about a half an hour to finish. They make it an interactive presentation and present it more like a game with cool sounds, graphics, and points. Here are a couple examples of the policy. Gifts, gratuities, and favors. The company observes a zero tolerance policy for the acceptance or solicitation of any improper gift, gratuity, or favor, including meals and entertainment, by employees who are involved in the grading, identifying, or evaluating of gemstones. Any employee who is determined to have engaged in any such conduct will be immediately terminated from employment with company. The next part made me think of rhetorical ethics and discretion. Woo-wee! That is one of my favorite words. Discretion. Depending on legitimate business needs, some divisions may allow the acceptance of gifts of a nominal value in very limited circumstances, provided that on each occasion you immediately disclose the particulars of the gift, i.e. the client, the value of the gift, the reason for the gift, in writing to your manager and a representative of the Human Resources Department. Questions regarding the application of this policy should be directed to a representative of the Human Resource Department. Now that, whoever shared this, that is a great one, because I talk about that word all the time, and they're even deflecting in this, like, whoa, before you even get started, if you got any questions, don't even ask me. You got to go down the hall and talk to such and such. It's like they already know that this is a little suspicious, that if someone looks at this closely enough, they might have questions, and you should, because it seems like there are loopholes that you can get around this. If, oh, well, we're having a baby, so they had to give me, you know, X amount of dollars. And even that, like, I think one of the words that they, because they are not very specific, it starts out with them being a little bit more specific about what is acceptable, and then it gets a little bit vague when it says, well, maybe sometimes we can allow nominal value. Who has the discretion to decide what is quote unquote nominal? Is $5,000 nominal? $20,000? $100,000? I mean, where is the, and is it the same every time? So if this person gets $1,000 and that's nominal this time, if we get $1,000 next time, is that still nominal? And this seems like the sort of thing that they might be secretive about. If somebody does get the exception, is the entire company notified, or is it just, you know, select people in HR, or, you know, does everybody get to know, so we see what, this is an exception, so everybody understands, oh, okay, this is why Helen got the $5,000 gift and nobody else gets a gift. Okay. Continuing. Other examples were relationships with clients. Big one. I would have had a lot of questions there. Vendors, students, and then outside financial interests. The outside financial interest portion of the quiz seemed to be the largest. It was tied into issues of acquiring information that could be used personally or passed on to others to get a boost in related industries, and not necessarily direct competition. The benchmark for the quiz was about 1,300 points out of about 1,900, and each question being about 120 points. I had a perfect score by the end of the testing. Bravo. My biggest help was substituting white people for the term company and keeping in mind an equation that is a conflict of my interest, white greater than non-white. Brilliant. Brilliant. Great codification. And that is fascinating. Discretion that pops up. Anytime discretion pops up with regards to your workplace and policy and procedure, you should pay very, very close attention and take very detailed notes and ask for, you know, written copy if, you know, they present that. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you have commentary you would like to share on anything that has been discussed thus far, if you have your own comments you want to get in, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Hope everybody's doing all right tonight. I've been talking to you guys like the past couple weeks about like the white lady that's been hugging me at my job. And, she's not hugging me anymore, but she's starting to say little comments to me. And, this was last week. She had to come in early because one of my coworkers had to go to the orthodontist. Excuse me. And, she came in early, and we have a Spotify that runs in the store. And about maybe 20 minutes after my other coworker had left, the Spotify shut off. I guess she had, like, turned it on in her car or something. And so I said, well, you know, I'll just sign into my Spotify. And this pale woman looks me in my face and says, well, you better not play any rap music. And I was like, excuse me? She was like, don't play any rap music. That makes me nervous. And I was just trying to figure out, like, what would make her think that I would play some rap music at work on the store speakers. And then, so, I didn't really see her much, like, with how our shifts are set up. I didn't really see her much. And then I saw her yesterday and today. And yesterday, I really didn't say much to her at all. And then she kept trying to engage me in conversation. And I just, like, kept myself busy doing other tasks throughout the store. And today, she invited me to her house for a St. Patrick's party tomorrow. I'm just really at a loss with what this woman wants from me.
Domination. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask if anybody was having to deal with any tackiness related to what they call St. Patrick's Day and right on schedule. How did you respond to the invitation to her house?
I politely declined it. I don't party with white people. I don't know what they're trying to do to me.
Excellent. Excellent. I just think she wants to dominate and control you, and whites employ a variety of means. Sometimes that might mean, you know, a whip. Sometimes that might mean a gun. Sometimes that might mean sexual intercourse. Sometimes that might mean, you know, come and have dinner with me at my house. And then, you know, maybe I can sneak a hug in. Or maybe you'll come to like me so much that you'll want to hug me. Domination. Like, they're so deceitful and cunning with how they go about their business of dominating us that, you know, I think that just the best thing to do. She has already clearly in my opinion, just from what you shared, she has clearly identified herself as a race soldier. I would treat her as such. We're going to be job related. It is job related courtesy. That's a term, job related courtesy. This is not we're homies. This is not I need to come and be at your baby shower. Job related courtesy. That's how we can get down. I can acknowledge you if we're in the workplace. But beyond that, no, we're not hanging. We're not kicking it. Nothing. Job related courtesy. That's all she would get.
And that's all she's going to get from this point. I mean, I never really partied with anybody that I work with anyway. But, like, especially with every single coworker that I have being white, I'm really not looking to hang out with any of them outside of work.
Great piece of codification, in my opinion, and might even, well, I was going to say it might even be a good policy to put in across the board for white people and non-white people, but I do acknowledge and appreciate that a lot of the folks listening in, I think Thomas in New York, Emmy, Roz, quite a few of you all have reached out to other black employees. So right on. That's great. I think that's black self-respect right there, trying to share constructive information and help out other black coworkers. Did you have anything more you were going to share, ma'am?
No, that was it.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you for the update. That is extremely important. I am very grateful for that update us. So if you call in and you have an issue, regardless, if you, hey, Gus is talking crazy and I'm, you know, not going to listen to anything he has to say about this, fine. You know, if you use your brain computer, you are intelligent, come to your own conclusion, and you are most informed about your workplace situation. So whatever strategy you take, great, use it and just let us know how things progress from there, because that helps us get a better understanding of what to do, what not to do, just how all of this works in terms of dealing with the workplace. Other folks that we have not heard from, line should be open. Feel free if you have commentary.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I would start off by saying to the lady who just gave her report is to keep doing what you're doing. Understand that is standard behavior from white people. And she is probably not going to let off, although she may give you a break, so to speak, at some period of time, but expect for it to continue and be steadfast, on it. And, because where I perceive it with white people from my observations is that it is worth their work to attempt to invest into a non-white black person to get them to melt them down, to gain that non-white person, especially the non-white black person's loyalty, because unfortunately we have a habit once we get ourselves into that type of situation, it becomes a situation very much like Stockholm syndrome, to whereas we actually applaud white people even more so than we do each other. But stay steadfast in that situation, and it sounds like you are applying the correct codification. I took a while to come on because it was kind of like minimum amount of information to share with during this week, but nevertheless there was a few situations. For instance, right now we are engaged in, like most football programs from the high school to the NFL level, actually, that are involved in their what is called off-season programs, which is, you know, conditioning as far as lifting weights or whatever, stuff like that. What that does for me, it gives me an opportunity to share and exchange with younger non-white black males. That is basically what it does for me. The principal first had the white male who is in a sexual relationship with a black female, had him doing this because they're about to purchase some weight training, new weight training equipment and whatnot, that sort of thing. And plus he was already he's a full-time teacher and they are, giving him some money to stay after school, and they already gave it to him. And the principal, as I think I mentioned before, has been kind of like, fighting with the white male who is the athletic director. And the person I'm talking about is the assistant athletic director. So to mess with him so he can't go home after school, he had him doing this, but somehow he got out of it. You know, white people are going to do that, be able to do that. And so, which is all right with us, because we, meaning myself and the non-white black male who's the head coach, we don't mind doing it ourselves. First of all, because those are our children, those are our guys that we work with on a daily basis. And therefore, I was put in the place to do it. I've been doing it for, you know, somewhere around 30 years or so. So I have an idea of what I'm doing, which is not a problem at all. And that's an example of workplace racism, about the way white people can get out of doing things. Also, one of the traditions of winning a championship, as most of us know, is that that team also gets awarded by getting rings. You see it on the professional level in most sports, the collegiate level, and yes, it also happens on the high school level. The only issue is, when it gets down to the high school level, is where the money is going to come from, as far as they're concerned. Now, in the past, that has been accomplished at some of the places that I've been that have won championships. You would have, you know, you have one or two or several young people that have, you've coached in high school, who have went all the way to the professional level, NFL level, who would donate monies, because within the public school system, you can't give money for items such as rings. So that means the team or whatever have to go out there and actually raise money. Now, young people today are not going to do that, and or if they are going to do it, it's not a whole lot of them that's going to do that. And the atmosphere that I'm working in, most of the people who are in positions of authority at this school are white people. And they ain't going to give no niggas nothing of that sort, as far as from winning anything. They could care less about it. So that's where the limber is at. But then again, I don't go that far down there to be in the company of those young people for a ring anyway, as far as I'm concerned. And if I wanted one bad enough, I'd go down there and purchase one for myself if that was something I wanted. No, it's not. It's not diamonds and gold, anything like that. I kind of like ask questions about it, to whereas it would satisfy me that non-white people didn't have to go around crawling around to obtain the items to make these rings. It's a business that supplies class rings and some other trinkets for high school, on the high school level. Very popular down here. Then again, it may be, I don't know if it's known outside the state of Florida, but the name of the company is Herf Jones. I don't know if anybody outside of the state of Florida may know about them. But anyway, that's another issue that I would assume would get resolved some kind of way along the line. But I really don't, you know, really don't put any investment in it, you know, anyway. And let me think, anything else? The only thing else that I can speak of is a lesson in self-respect overall with the young people that I deal with on Saturdays. I'm making it a commitment to where it's now a permanent thing. I don't get paid in financially in money in most of the stuff that I'm doing. But I certainly, the payment, if you want to call it that, is just the exchange, the company of being in the presence of young non-white black males, as far as not so much of me telling them something, but sharing, which is actually the payment for me. And so I'll be once again doing that on Saturday, this coming Saturday again, and looking forward to it. That's basically it. Thank you.
Spectacular retired firefighter. That is awesome work, working with those young folks. I am, knowing you over the years that you've called in, I'm sure managed to get in some constructive information and may even help some of those folks get a better understanding of racism. Job well done. And that I thought was important, echoing at the beginning for the black female who was talking about this white woman asking her to come to the house, that she's not going to relent, that is a major strategy for racists, where they try to get you to lower your suspicion of them. They like to. I think we've even had some of those white guests on the program who said, you know, they started off with this black person and the black person was correctly suspicious of them. But it's almost like they brag, say, oh, yeah, we had a ways to go. She thought I was racist at first or whatever. But we worked through it and we're closest sisters. Now, we've had white people literally come on the program and brag about that. So very good to keep that in mind. And also thought it was important. White people are very good at getting out of doing tasks, responsibilities on the job, and then getting that blamed on a black person. I think we've had that increasingly brought up as a problem that a number of black people are experiencing. Me being determined to get through these emails before we get to the next person that we have not heard from, black female wrote in. Now, she warned us that there is explicit commentary in the email. So if you have younger people and you're concerned or what have you, as long as it's, you know, racists cursing, I don't edit what they're saying. So we will proceed. When depicting the interplay between white people and black people, Neely Fuller Jr. put it best when he stated, during the existence of white supremacy, the interaction between white people and non-white people and between non-white people and each other can best be described as tacky, trashy, and or terroristic. The tragic arrangement, page 167, United Independent, Compensatory Code System Concept. It's my hope that the following account concerning me and my white coworker will highlight the tacky to terroristic progression of our interactions with each other. First off, let's call this coworker Betty. From time to time, I have to visit Betty's department to have her sign off on some documents. Well, at first, we would engage in light, harmless conversation. Then, even the word harmless relating to anything having to do with whites, proceeding. Then Betty would start to talk about her husband and how awful he is and how he doesn't fulfill her sexually. Oh, my. I told her that it's best that she communicate that to him and even get couples counseling if needed. A few months later, Betty would jokingly ask me if there were any big dicks in my department because she needed one. This kind of threw me. I just recall laughing nervously and abruptly walking away. Well, it got much worse. It always does with white people. Betty started wearing dark brown lipstick and leaving work early on some Fridays. As soon as she changed her lipstick, I knew that she was on the hunt for a black male. I've just noticed that. Here in Ohio, a lot of white women that date, quote unquote, black males. Sure enough, a lot of white women that date black males tend to wear dark reddish brown colored lipstick. True to form, Betty started saying that she needed a big black. Sure enough, a few weeks later, Betty confessed that she had been seeing a black male on the side. I quickly grew tired of Betty's tacky conversation about all the black males she'd been having sex with, so I started making her come to my department to sign off on paperwork. I knew that she would be less likely to misbehave in my area because my department is very quiet and conservative due to all the executives' offices in the department. To date, this new arrangement seems to be working. Again, brilliant. These are just tactical maneuvers that you can make. Just like we had the black female before who wrote in and said, you know, she started requesting time in the office, even if she didn't have to meet anybody. She would just go in there by herself so she would be distanced from everybody, minimizing their ability to mistreat her. Same thing, just brilliant move. You come to my area, and I know you're not going to act all tacky and be talking about all of this in front of all of these high-level white people. I know you're going to behave yourself for the, you know, 5 minutes that we have to do our interaction. Continuing. Fast forward several months later, I noticed that Betty and a few other coworkers would call each other ho. I was in the front lobby one day talking to the receptionist when Betty walked in and said, "Hello, ho." I just looked at her dumbfounded for a minute, then I snapped out of my stupor. I emphatically told her that I don't play like that and that she needs to call me by my name. The receptionist quickly came to her defense and said that Betty was just playing and that's how they have fun with each other. The receptionist even said that she herself was Betty's hoe. I restated that I must be addressed by my name only. Betty seems to have gotten the point about the name-calling issue. I had to speak up. I just couldn't allow Betty to project her own sexual morality onto me by calling me out of my name. Thanks for allowing me to share. Brilliant. Just restate your calls. I don't know if the receptionist was a white person or a non-white person. It would not matter. My code would be the same. To restate and then to, if I need to speak to both of them, say it for you, Betty, and whoever the receptionist, I'll restate it for you. This is the policy for everybody in the building forever. As long as I work here, if you see me anywhere else in life, do not ever call me that for any reason. Call me by my name and that's it, and make that extremely clear that, you know, this is going to be an unacceptable problem if this continues, and just be mindful of that. You know, if they get into that sort of tack, and if you see this sort of thing happening where they're, you know, starting to play like that, that might be one that you, you know, go ahead and preempt folks so that we head off a problem. Like, I see you all joking around and doing that, that's on you. I am not involved in that at all. I am calling everybody, and that's what I say for black. We should just be in the habit of being serious. Everybody, Mr. Johnson, Miss Smith, Mrs. Johnson, that's the way you talk to everybody, whether, you know, this person and I have been friends since elementary school or whether I can't stand this person. It's the same thing. Hello, Miss Smith. Hello, Miss Thorndike. Right. Mm-hmm. Afternoon, same thing with everybody. I'm not doing any nicknames. I don't even like calling people on a first name basis on a job, but I do know in some places they kind of insist that. But just be known, courteous, serious. That's it. We're not into all this little pettiness and joking around with everybody, because that stuff will get real tacky. And if you've participated in it at all, then it'll be, oh, wait a minute now. Now, you know, were calling Ted nicknames the other day, or you were laughing about it and joking. I mean, come on, you got to give as good as, that's the thing that, and it could be that everybody was messing around and calling each other names, and then they end up calling you nigger or some other name like that, or it'll be some sort of racist attack, and then they'll expect you to joke around with it. So do not engage in any of that on the job. And any of the gossip, I would really, once you see it starting to go in that direction, I would immediately bring it back to the job. This is why I'm not here to talk about, you know, who the Redskins team is going to pick up in the offseason. I'm not here to talk about, you know, isn't it sad that Hillary Clinton... What are we supposed to be doing? Let's get back on that so we can get that done. And always it would be, I have things to do. Like, I really got to stay on the ball. Like, if I, you know, had everything taken care of and could put my feet up, then yeah, we could sit around. But that's not the case. I got, you know, a lot of things to get done, and I'm sure you do too. So let's get to it. That's constantly on task, and you can get a reputation for that. That should work out in your favor. You know, that Gus, always on task. He's not in here. We are all goofing around. We love talking about the game and who's going to win the tournament and everything, and he's just, that's one thing. He keeps us on task. Absolutely right. Let's stay on task. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you dialed in, have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, everyone. I'm not having so much of a problem this week. It's an annoyance. I'm noticing, and I guess I should start off with, in the past, I have spoken about how my job, they will give us these procedures and give us these rules to follow, and then during some meeting, And then it seems like I'm the only one who's following the rules, because like these new rules, there'll be a harder way for us to get through our work, resolve our work. So we have another meeting recently, and now, of course, the rules have changed when I have done my hardest to memorize the old way of doing it. And one of the things, of course, that they said in the meeting is that, well, you know, if something was, if we always do something one way, it can change. So it kind of like reminds me of the whole discretion thing that you constantly speak about. So the issue is like now that they've changed the rules, and I also deal with customers, I feel like now, before, they seemed like they were under so much scrutiny from all these different regulators to make sure that the customers are treated correctly and treated right. So now that's why they made us go through all these different issues to, or made us go through all these different rules to resolve the customer's issues. So now it seems like we're kind of reverting back to putting all the onus back onto the customer, which I feel like that's definitely wrong, and it kind of hurts me. Not so much hurts me, but it does make me feel bad for our customers, because it's like now, you know, we're only watching out for the company when even in our mission statements, it's supposed to be the opposite way around. It's supposed to be, you know, basically customers first, what have you. So, but the nuisance that I'm seeing now is that it seems like since I've changed and since I've tried to codify it myself, which means I'm not joking around with these people. I'm really not even trying to smile at them. Just basically, like you say, you know, it just sticking to work-related stuff, especially with all the white people in my job. Well, my supervisor is making it known that, like, I guess he really is appreciative of how much I've learned and how much information I have, and that's more than what he knows in so many different levels. And so it seems like it's a constant thing, and it definitely makes me worry or more alert, because I feel like it's not just, I feel like there's some type of grand, I don't want to say a grand scheme behind it, but it seems like they're not doing this for no reason. It seems like since I've changed, since I'm not as I guess as happy-go-lucky, the higher up in my company, if I do see them, they always make it a point to stop me and have me smile, or smile at me until I smile back, and also tell me how good of a job I'm doing. And it's like, I just don't care. I feel like, and these are the same people who won't let me go over to a different area. So I guess that's, and of course, most of the, all of the higher ups that I know of are white. I'm not sure of any, especially in my area, there's not any non-white supervisors, managers, what have you. That's all I had this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Wow. Yeah, that that sort of thing. I think Dr. Umar, he was on a previous, he's been on many times, but on one of those occasions, he discussed how they will change the SAT and some of these other standardized tests, the ACT and what have you, when black people begin to close the deficit on white people in those areas, racial disparities and like standardized testing, when they begin to close those disparities, they change the test up and then the disparities come back. Whites do that same sort of thing on the workplace all the time, and it's just to annoy you sometimes. It's not even, sometimes they make these changes and they are not improvements. They do this sort of thing sometimes just to annoy you. And you could be comfortable, great, efficient the way they were doing things, and now you are way less proficient. And that's just one of the things in terms of being a part of your codification. And I think one thing, just having that in mind, that racists, they love to do this sort of thing. They do not like to see us get comfortable as non-white people. They like us just to be stressed out and just to come in and mess things up for no reason. So just having that in mind, that they could do that sort of thing and just be prepared that, you know, they could come into mind. And sometimes they'll do it just in changing your the office, the way the offices are positioned, where you could be in a nice, comfortable spot, and then they'll just come mess it up and move you someplace where now you have a really, you know, poor workstation, work area. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share. If you have comments on what you've heard thus far, or if you have your own incidents you want to discuss, feel free.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. I was calling in. I'm the lady who wrote an email to you last week about my coworkers terrorizing me on the job. And I was just calling in to give an update of what's been going on. I'm not sure if you remember.
Were you the one where they were doing the bang bang noise behind you at work?
Yes.
Oh, okay, right on. Yes, this was from last week for people. If you didn't listen to the broadcast from last week, I think you said it was white people and non-white people who were just harassing you and making your work situation miserable. And you even heard them doing like a bang bang noise, like they were doing a shooting noise behind you one day. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So I took some of the suggestions that were given to me last week, and I spoke to my manager about what's been going on, and she told me to document everything that that's what I have been going through, and she said that an investigation will be done, and she asked me if I wanted to change seats so I won't be around those certain coworkers that have been terrorizing me, and I said yes to that. And my biggest concern is I'm sure that these coworkers will deny what they've been doing. So I just hope that that this will be resolved and I won't have to continue being terrorized.
Hey, man, did they has your seat been moved?
No, not yet. She just wants me to start first by documenting everything. So I just kind of wanted to know, like, if they deny what they've been doing to me, like, how should I respond to that?
Well, in those situations where it's he said, she said, that's kind of what they say. It's just going to be your word against theirs, and presumably it's it could be more of them all saying, no, none of us did this, none of us heard anybody do or say such a thing or do any bang bang. It could be, you know, all of them saying that against you, saying that it did happen. And then, you know, if there's no recordings or documentation or anything, they might move your seat, just say that it's unfounded. That's the type of thing that I've heard before in these type. That's what I've seen before in these sort of situations where there's no evidence. They might move your seat anyway, just as a way to resolve the situation. If that does happen and they do not offer to move your seat, I would request it anyway, since it was offered, that you think that that would be an appropriate way to move forward. If there's space available, just that you can have a different seating area, and that way, you know, the problem will be resolved. You won't be there to make unfounded reports, and, you know, they won't have to be interviewed for things that they didn't do. Everybody wins. If they're not willing to move your seat and they've done this investigation and you have to stay there, obviously I could see how things could get worse or could just continue in the way that they were, which already was very unacceptable. When do you think you'll know like the conclusion of their investigation?
I'm going to ask her tomorrow about that, but she just wanted me to first start by documenting everything today. And I'm going to give it to her tomorrow.
Right on. I think somebody suggested last week even documenting what you told us, just writing it out in a clear-cut format. That's why I say that all the time, like documenting on the job, having a workplace journal is so important, because it puts you, anybody in any sort of situation where people are terrorizing you on the job verbally, when you have names, dates, exact quotes, this is what the person said, or those recordings. That's why I said that too. Practice if there, because it seemed like this had been going on for a while. just record. It is a very different thing when you have that recording or you have written documentation that goes back over the last 2-3 months of these incidents. This was said at 11 p.m. By Jane Hutchinson. Such and such, she said such and such and such and such about me. And, you know, everyone laughed or what have you. Or whatever it is that's being said, if it's a racist joke or whatever that is documented, when you have that on record, it's just, it presents your case in a much more stronger fashion, much more formidable, much more serious, as opposed to just going in and you have to give it verbally. But all learn, that's not, you know, just we're all learning, just the value of having documentation.
Yes, and I wanted to record what's been going on, but cell phones are not allowed, and we're not allowed to have them out, so I'm not able
to do that. They do have those watches. Not that I'm promoting anybody because we don't get shares, but they now they have, it's a watch, and all you have to do is tap it, and it will record, I think it's 60-second intervals. It'll record, and it sends an MP3 of that recording. It'll be available on your phone, and you can just download it or what have you. And you can, I mean, you can record hours. Just tap, and it gives you a 60-second audio recording. It'll be an MP3 format, but they have those. They have stuff on you. I mean, they got all kinds of pens, anything you can imagine that you could easily get in there, and then you could just have it on. You could easily access, bang, record them, and then you'll. And a lot of this stuff is not expensive. I know the watch thing, I think, is $30 or less. They have pens that will do the same thing that I think are around $20. Keychains, all kinds of gadget, man. 21st century.
Okay, I'll look into that. And just one thing that I regretted doing today, like when I explained to her what's been going on, I got a little emotional, and I know that one of the callers suggested that I don't cry or anything or get emotional. I got a little emotional because it's just I've been going through it for so long that I just think my emotions got the best of me, and I really did not want to cry or anything, but it's just been so stressful and just disturbing, like what I have been going through. So
being human, that's all of us, just be, I mean, you have been terrorized. That is what happens. And you had said last week, I think you, in your email, you expressed that, you know, it was really bothering you, having people making gun noises and constantly being hostile to you. I would definitely, I've been saying it for myself and everyone else, we should definitely make time for self-care. If you can request a day off or time off. And even in light of this investigation, I think that should be, you know, a part of the request if it comes back founded or unfounded. If you can, you know, maybe have a day or 2 days to recuperate, I think at minimum, just to take some mental health days to de-stress, particularly if you know, it was so difficult even having to recount, to relive all of these insults and vile behavior that you've endured. I think that might be appropriate as well if you want to take some time to think about it. I don't know how long you've worked at this place or how they are about leave of absence. But I mean, if there has to be an investigation because of your toxic work environment, I definitely think, you know, a day or two off for mental health is not asking too much.
I'm not sure if I can get those days off for mental health. I believe that where I work is paid time off, so I believe it's approved on business needs only. So I'm not sure.
This for sure to me would sound like a business need. I'm an integral part of the business, and you are reporting that you've been violated, terrorized on the job, and that certainly has a big impact on you. Again, if you know we're doing the interview process and it's that difficult, that to me seems like this is someone in need of some time off. I would, again, you can think about it. You know your work environment and your situation best. You can think about, you know, what would be in your best interest, but it certainly sounds like you could use some time to just take care of yourself.
Yes, I agree.
This is how when we talk about, you know, Gwen Ifill, and why I think this is, you know, so important that we talk about workplace racism, because this is how you have Gwen Ifill passing away at 61, and she was a victim of racism, white supremacy, and experienced it explicitly on the job. When you have this stress every day and it just goes on for your entire work career, it adds up. And particularly when it doesn't get addressed and we don't get to take time to heal. We don't, you know, even get to take time to try to deal with some of these issues on the job to try to minimize some of our stress. But it's really, really important because it has a huge impact on our quality of life. Did any of the listeners, did you all have any suggestions that you wanted to offer?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was going to say, too, maybe you should look into your manual, because I know in some workplaces they do allow provisions for stress and mental health, so you might want to check into that. They might even have, like services where you can talk to someone just to get it off, get that stuff off of you, so you can kind of, it's more cathartic, in other words, or they might allow you to see someone temporarily, and that way that can be noted on the job. So that way they have a record of what was happening, whether or not these people, band together and say, oh, we weren't doing whatever. The whole idea that you had to go through that process would lend credence to what you're dealing with, even if these people lie and say that they weren't doing anything to you at all. And excuse me. And another cheap recording method that costs like $11 and change on Amazon, it's a USB recorder, and it records up to 13 straight hours of audio, and you can actually cut it. So if it's even if you choose to record your whole day and there's only certain spots in the day that you need, you can cut them to those areas so that you have a running record. And it's really, really cheap. You can get it on Amazon. I think if you have Amazon Prime, you should get it within like 2 days. And that way you have something that where you can actually record, every day. And like Gus was saying, I think beyond just writing, that is awesome because you have them speaking in their own words. So even if they lie, you can just play it and bang, you got them right there. I really, really feel bad. Like, you really hit me today as far as just listening to you speak. And I'm very, very sorry for what you're going through. And I pray that you're able to get this mitigated properly so that you can take care of yourself. Please stay safe. And also, I would suggest if you also would like to, if you can get a tactical pen, they run as cheap as $19, as high as maybe 40 or 50. But basically, it's aircraft grade aluminum or steel in the form of a pen that you can use to break glass if you're in an accident and you're trapped in a car. But you can also use it to defend yourself. And they are as lethal as a gun if you choose to make it as lethal as a gun. This is something that FBI agents and CIA agents take with them in places where they are not allowed to carry a weapon. And there's a lot of tutorials on YouTube on how to use it. You do not have to be, excuse me, a big person weighing 200 pounds. You can literally be 90 pounds soaking wet and take down a 200-pound guy with a tactical pen once you know how to use it. So I do wish you the best. Please stay safe, and I'll keep us posted on how this develops. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
For sure. Any other folks have suggestions?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. So my suggestion for the last female caller would be, do as Gus had suggested. I think that that was excellent advice. You need to take time to for your mental health. Somebody threatens your life, bang, bang. That means die. That means they're trying to kill you. So if you can, take time off. Take a few days off. The other thing I would say is something I've said before, is that you don't be quiet about crimes against you. You always want to protect yourself, protect your person, defend yourself. So, Facebook is an excellent tool. I like that particular form of social media. You know who they are. You know their faces. You know their names. Post it on Facebook. Say what happened. That way everybody has access to the particular information instead of just on a. It's excellent that you're sharing it on this show, but there's no faces. You may need to share it on the type of media that there's faces. And even though it may not even get back to these individuals, these white people, it may not, but it might. And the thing is, a lot of times that stops a lot of actions when people know they're being watched by a big group, especially when they know they're being watched by black men who are pretty upset. So that would be my advice. Thank you.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I definitely just wanted to second what Roz said about checking the manual, and also just also what the last caller said, because I definitely feel like, you know, with the bang bang sounds, I understand that, you know, it was a group of both white and non-white people, but from just if we were to reverse the roles, if it were a white woman and you had a group of even non-white and white people behind her, saying the bang bang noise, it definitely seems like she would be able to play the victim, or definitely address yourself. Try, if you can, address yourself as being victimized, because I know, like I've said in other shows, I feel like that's definitely there. To me, white women's aim is to reduce our victimhood. And I know, like with my job, they gave us extensive harassment training and how to report it, how to identify it. So, and I did have a question. If they're doing all this, are they doing this when it's just you and them in that particular area? Is there no one else? I understand that you can't really depend on anyone else, but I'm just wondering, are they just that bold to do it in front of everyone, almost as if they're bullying you, like you all were in school? That's all I had. Thank you.
They do it usually when the manager is not around.
Do any other folks have suggestions for our black female?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, guys. I did not mean to cut you. I just don't move fast enough, so I jumped in really quick. Thank you for taking my call. Greetings, beautiful people. This is Amy. To the female caller who shared her story, I would like to just state again, Gus said it, but I can hear it as well. I don't know what you have to do, how you can do it, but see if you can get some time off and use that time to do something that's going to rejuvenate you. You know, I'm not trying to say to support all the nail shops and stuff like that, but mani-pedi, spa day, massage, relax, long baths, like those kinds of things. Like, do something that's going to kind of reset your energy as well. Because, I mean, to me, you sound really, really exhausted and tired. And I can completely understand being in such a terroristic environment. But now you have some resolve. You've gone through certain steps. If you can, like, I don't know. I guess one way to do it is to go, like, to ask permission and see if you can get that. And then another one would just be like, I'm sick. I don't know which one would be the best one. I've done both. So just, I guess, depending on what would be best, because you don't want to cause any more problems. But I do think taking that time would be very healthy for you. That's what I wanted to share.
Can I be heard? Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Gus. Hello to Gus and the family. I drive a truck for a living. I went into a fast food restaurant and ordered some breakfast. I got my breakfast. I walked back to the truck, and the food was cold. I went back in, and I told the cashier my food was cold. The cashier goes back and says, "Hey, Toby." Then the person came up looking around. It's like, what? And I looked. And I really didn't think nothing of it. Gave me my food. I go back to the truck and get to thinking. That sounded like that could have been some coded message. I just wanted to put that out and see what people thought about it. Thank you. Let me share.
Oh, for sure. When I hear the name Toby, because it is an infrequent name. I very rarely bump into anybody named Toby. The vast majority of the time, when I hear someone called Toby. It's in reference to the movie Roots. And I do know that some racists, that is a racial slur, where they just call a black person Toby or reference a black person as Toby, like they're calling you a slave. So, you know, hey, that could very well have been what's happening. There are lots of racist restaurant codes. Joe Feagan has a whole book about that. He's been a guest on this program. We talked about it. So very well could be what was happening. And just another great reminder in terms of why it's a great not to eat out. But certainly there are a lot of black people who are called all kinds of names on the job. Would not be the first time. Just before we moved on, did anybody else have suggestions for the female, black female caller being terrorized on the job now they're having an investigation? Anybody else have suggestions? Okay, folks are there. Definitely, I hope you are able to take some time off. Man, several days would be great to just care for yourself and really do some things that you enjoy. If you can get any of those recording devices moving forward, that would be awesome as well. And then if it continues, and like I said at the very beginning of the program, all of us, we can practice with our recording device so we can quickly have it accessible so you can get to it within the next 5 seconds. Bang, recorded, and then that very day I would make sure you get it, you know, on your computer or what have you. You just have that documented if it continues. But definitely let us know how the investigation comes out, and if they have like a written report, I would request a copy, regardless of what the final result is. If there's some sort of if it's a 1-page summary, 2-page summary, whatever it is, I would request a copy of whatever their conclusion is. Are there other folks that we have not heard from? Before we get to the other folks we have not heard from, other emails that I have not read. Number one, this is from the young 16-year-old black female who wrote in before about some of the issues she was having at school. She wrote in again. She said, "I wanted to share something I've been experiencing lately in the classroom. I'm a junior in high school, and I have several classes with a white male student. I've noticed recently that he has been making inappropriate sexual comments to my black male classmates. For example, he often tells my classmate that he has a nice butt, knowing that it will make him uncomfortable. In another class, he torments our black classmate by making references to anal sex and talked about touching his genitals. My classmates usually laugh it off in a nervous way, but it makes me extremely uncomfortable. Do you have any advice on how to deal with this situation or how to confront how to comfort my classmates?" Wow, to have someone so young having to deal with this. And we can make sure we don't have speakerphone on. Anyone, if you are listening, can't be on speaker. I guess if you're driving, you gotta do what you gotta do. But if you're driving and you call in to speak, we'll have to go ahead and get you on because it just makes a lot of noise. But for the 16-year-old, I'm so sorry that you're having to deal with this, but this is war. This is what the context of white supremacy is. And back to that question, what does it mean to be white? That right there is a sterling illustration. Sexually terrorizing black people, that is a major aspect, one of the primary aspects of what whites devote themselves to doing. And you see, it starts very young. I would report this. Not only would I report it to the teacher, I would tell your parents, particularly if this is something that's been going on for a long time, I would tell the teacher of the class where it's happening. And I would also tell the principal of the school that this is happening and that you reported it to the teacher. If you could tell the teacher, she says anything, great. I would still tell the principal and I would let him know. I told the teacher, and if you're satisfied with how she handled it, great. But I'm just reporting it to you because this has been happening for a while and it's making me uncomfortable. I think it's totally incorrect, and I just want to make sure that this problem gets solved. I would tell them, and that way, if you tell the principal, maybe they can have a whole meeting with the whole class, because sometimes I've seen that happen where a problem was happening at school and it got reported to the principal, and they went and made brand new rules almost overnight, went and made brand new rules to address the problem and had a whole meeting and got very serious and let people know this is what's going to happen. These are the new rules and this is what the punishment is going to be. They could do that. So that would be my suggestion, to report it to the teacher of the class or classes where this is happening. I would tell your parents and I would tell the principal as well. Regardless, once you told the teacher, you can say she handled it well or she didn't handle it well or whatever the case. I would tell them as well. And same thing, document every time that this happens. You can do the same thing that I just told the workplace people. You can record. If you want to get a recording device, if you have your phone, record. And that way folks can hear, because they have done that at schools where they've done the same thing. People were doing racist jokes and things, and someone just pulled out their phone and started recording. They allow you to have your phone in school, record. That way you can get all of these, you know, talking about, you know, this person's butt and anal sex this and all of that. You can just record all of that as an example of what they're doing and present the information, teacher, parents, principal, anybody else that's going to help solve this problem. Folks have suggestions for, you know, since she's asking for how she should go about dealing with this. Any other folks have suggestions?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Ken Steele, and I'm in Orange County at the moment. And I wanted to say, before you start recording people and presenting these recordings to other people, you may want to check the law regarding what they call wiretapping in the jurisdiction that you're currently in. I'm currently in a jurisdiction, I found out recently, that wiretapping, what they call wiretapping, or recording someone without their knowledge is against the law. In fact, in this state of California, all parties in the recording have to be informed that a recording is being made. And they even, I did some research, and they even cover the law even covers situations where you have a recording of an event taking place or a conversation taking place, and you make a transcript of the recording and you destroy the recording. That too, that transcript is also considered an illegal wiretap. In fact, V. Stiviano, the mistress of Sterling, a few years back, had to pay damages because she violated the wiretapping statute here in California. So if you are planning to make recordings of suspected white supremacist racists, be aware of the law in your state. And if you do, my suggestion would be to use these recordings to aid in your memory when recounting stories or conversations, and avoid, if you are in a jurisdiction where it's illegal to quote unquote wiretap someone, you have to make sure that the recording that you have, just know that it is illegal, and you have to make it seem as though you are recounting whatever you're recounting from a conversation from memory. So act as though you're just recording, you're writing down your thoughts as though they were just fresh thoughts, rather than making a transcript. And that's what I'll say for the previous caller. Thank you.
Great. Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. I know Stoddy Reed, has shared that before and given out the website for phone conversations. I know it's different for in-person conversation, but I shared the website that shows the state laws. Great information as well to know about where your particular area is. I would require documentation that V. Stiviano was required to pay if somebody has a report of that, because I remember explicitly CNN reported Donald Sterling's attorney said that that was a mutually agreed upon recording, that both parties were aware that that conversation that got released was being recorded. So I would like evidence that she had to pay because of that recording. if somebody could post that on Facebook or email it to me, I would appreciate that. That is not related to workplace racism. Any other suggestions, or if folks have their own commentary they would like to share, feel free.
Have you heard?
For sure.
You can just go ahead and I know this is a quick aside. Shelley Sterling wins court battle as DiStiviano must pay $2.6 million. This is a headline on the Daily Mail. And then this is also followed by a headline, DiStiviano forced to swap Ferrari for Hyundai as she moves out of LA duplex. So you can go ahead and follow up on the story under those links if you hit up Google. Also, I wanted to report on my run-in with workplace racism. Regarding the pants situation that I've been, mentioning on and off, things finally came to a head in that situation regarding my pants when I was called in for yet another meeting. And the meeting began with one manager telling me that, Ken, this conversation is just about making money. And then the other manager chimed in, no, it's not about making money. It's something else. And then they proceeded to tell me how awful my pants selection has been and how I need to change it. And in the course of this conversation, they also brought up several other grievances that they had with me, including the formality with which I was addressing one of my managers. And he said, in one email, I said, hey, man. And he said, this was very inappropriate. And I asked him, how would you like to be addressed? Should I address you as name, comma, or name, colon, which do you prefer? And then to which he responded, Ken, you're being a wise ass. And, I just didn't think that this was very professional, which was odd because the conversation was apparently how my attire was not professional. Anyway, so I'd say later in the conversation, look, if this is so important, how about we just codify this and you guys send me an email? And then they said, hold up, we're the managers here. And we're going to tell you when we're going to send an email. And yeah, we're definitely going to be writing this down in an email. Also, what do you mean by codify? And then I proceeded to say, kind of like how there are building codes, how there are, how there are electrical codes, just a proper way of going about things that's clearly spelled out so we don't run into situations like this. And, they said, okay, we'll keep that in mind. So the next day I get an email in my inbox that is long, but extremely vaguely written. It is just open for a lot of interpretations. First of all, it explicitly says that I'm not allowed to wear anything resembling joggers, sweatpants, or anything casual. So, which is odd because, it explicitly says in our manual that we are allowed to pick our clothing and that there is no dress code and that the only dress code is that there's no shorts allowed. But I was told that I specifically can't wear those pants, but I don't have any sort of specific assignment for what pants I should wear. It's all very confusing. So in reaction to this, I basically did some research online. I swore to myself, I'm not wearing denim. I really just wanted to avoid this. So
I found that they make pants that they call pajama jeans. And I found out about these, and, you know, I looked up some reviews, and I ordered a few pairs. And I have to say that these totally look like pajamas, or sorry, they totally look like jeans, but they feel like sweatpants. And I finally found a solution that that feels comfortable, but doesn't, I guess, arouse the suspicions of the people around me. Now, mind you, I'm wearing these pants, and they're great. I just had to get them a little custom size, and nobody can tell that I am super comfortable in these pants. They look just like jeans. So there was a ceremony earlier this week where they were celebrating this milestone that I crossed. And I guess the whole company is there. And I guess it's a pretty big deal. And in this ceremony, they have us hit a gong, you know, after we recite what we did. And, you know, we tell the details. So I go up to hit the gong, and I forgot that one of my earphones was in, and to which my manager, you know, as I was sitting down, he quickly mentioned, "Hey, you have an earphone in." And then later that day, a non-white victim of racism who is classified as black, you know, came up to me. And he's an African, I guess a black person of African origin, like myself. And, you know, he kind of came up to me, and except he's East African. I don't know if that makes a difference, but I just, yeah, you know, maybe it's the tribalism in me mentioning that, but he's East African. Anyway, so he came up to me, and he's like, hey, brother, what's going on? You know, and he's just like, you know, congratulations and everything like that. But, you know, do you want a suggestion? I said, hey, what's going on? What's up? And then he said, hey, man, you know, perception is reality. You know, the other day, you know, it was a pretty bad look that you had your earphone in. You know, the VP is there. The CEO is there. The president is there. You know, all these people are there and they're watching. And, you know, it's kind of bad that you had your earphone in. And, you know, it's, you got to watch the impression that you make. And I just thought to myself, you know what? You know, there's no way that I'm going to be super correct in my behavior all the time. If I'm going to be going by, you know, these insane standards. I was called to that meeting or to that ceremony right from my desk where, you know, I'm wearing my headphones. I was right in the middle of a call. I mean, I'm right there on the stage right after this. You know, I still have my headphones, one of my earphones in. Didn't mean any disrespect or anything like that. And if I keep worrying about, you know, stuff like that and, you know, all these little criticisms, it'll drive me crazy. So I'm not, you know, and I'm opting out of trying to conform to every single little thing. If they have a problem with something, I told them, you know, they can put it in an email. And I really don't appreciate them sending some, I'm assuming an apparatchik to, you know, kind of send this messaging my way. And, you know, this guy, I understand that he might be trying to, you know, help me deal with this situation. But today he came up to me and, you know, he said, hey, bro, can I give you another suggestion? And then he was, you know, like, you don't want to look so fly, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, because I was wearing a hoodie.
Hang tight, Mr. Steele. I just wanted to make sure that we had other people that didn't get a chance to share yet. But I had said that earlier in the program that I have seen where white people will change the rules if it's about wardrobe or what have you, when you brought up the pants things before, or then they'll come in and make some explicit presentation about, oh, okay, well, these specifically are not acceptable and that sort of thing. I've seen that happen before. I am glad you were able to find a quick remedy with that situation. I did want to get in, even though this is not workplace racism, it is important. I checked the link that you mentioned, judge orders V. Stiviano to return millions in assets to Shelley Sterling. This was not a ruling on her making an illegal recording. This was a ruling that she accepted gifts that had to be returned to Donald Sterling. This report doesn't mention anything about the recording being illegal or that having anything to do with this judgment. And I suspect that report is not going to be there because I saw on CNN and the LA Times within days of this case breaking that this was a mutually agreed upon recording and that there was no violation of the law with this recording or this recording being released. And I just bring that up because I've heard this repeatedly over the years where people will make this accusation and no one's ever been able to offer any proof. And I just go back exactly what I said. The sources that have said from day one, this was a mutually agreed upon recording in V. Stiviano's case. Back to workplace racism. Are there folks who have a hand up that we have not heard from at all who have commentary that they wanted to share? Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm in. Okay, so just a couple of things. Apologies for me taking so long. I wanted to make sure that I was in a quiet place. And if it was me that was like loud, I do apologize about that. This isn't me. I'm the one that's like in the DMV. I work as the overnight concierge over the weekend, so I have the distinct pleasure of dealing with drunk white people all the time. But anyway, I told you all of a racist who made himself known to me a couple of weeks ago because I also practice my recorder. I actually have a recorder. It's more for notes and stuff. I haven't upgraded to the new technology quite yet, but I also have the recorder on my phone. I keep both of them at my desk. I played a recording for you. That one was recorded on my phone that I then copied to the recorder so that when I'm on the phone talking to you all, I could play it from my recorder. But I actually practice that, like keeping an earbud in and like already having it up. I've positioned the app for my recorder so that it is super convenient. I have the thumb thing. So I unlock the phone with the thumb, hit it, boop, I can tell, like, it's done before that person even gets to my desk in a work situation. Because I can see it when it's happening or feel it when it's about to happen, and just in case it might happen, I already have it. Like, it's already recording. I have so many things that I just had to delete because I was like, okay, nothing actually happened, but I was ready. Just to say, in case other people are not really listening to Gus about the whole practicing thing, oh, yeah, I'm like, I'm ready. Boop, like, my finger is on that app. So this guy, this racist soldier, he does this thing where he'll walk past the desk and mumble pretty much about his dislike for me or distaste for me or whatever it is. And he's always saying, like, Jesus Christ, and da-da-da-da-da. Like, you know, he'll look over me and then turn his head sharply and say all that kind of stuff. Very terroristic, you know. And not this past one. I forgot to tell you all this one last week, but the week before last, he comes in, like, and I've just had enough. I'll just go ahead and let you all know. I think I'm suffering from racial battle fatigue. I mean, I'm not so exhausted that I'm not in the game or I'm not in the fight. I am. I just don't have the same. There's no leeway or space. I'm trying to minimize that so that my responses are real quick because the energy, the toll that it takes on me to have to think about these things later, to deal with them later, I don't have that type of energy. So he caught, and it's an overnight. So when he wakes up at, like, I know his schedule now. So between 6 and 6:30 is when he's meeting me, but I've been up all night by that time, you know? So I don't have it. Like, I'll just do, what do you need? Can I help you? Those are my codified responses. What's your name? Is there something I can help you with? How are you today? Do you need something? That's it. Those are my codified responses for anyone and everyone in that building, unless there's like a specific question. What time do the doors unlock or something like that? But other than that, that's it. So he walks past the desk and he looks over. He sees me. He decides he's going to mumble as he walks past me. All right, whatever. You caught me that time. So, but you have to come back in. So he comes back in with his dog. And it was funny because I actually didn't know that the doors were unlocked. I had been assuming that everyone had been using their fob. So what, you know, it's a big deal, but it's not a big deal. Like at 6:30 in the morning, I don't care. I get off in 30 minutes. So he comes in and he just walks like really briskly to the desk.
And he's, do you know why the door is unlocked? And I'm like completely caught off guard this actually, because I didn't know. And so I actually just say no, because I didn't. And he was like, well, have it fixed. And I was like, not my thing. Like, it just came out. I was like, that's not my job. And then he just looked and he started mumbling. And then I started doing it too. I'm not saying that this is codified. Anyone listening to this, I'm not saying that this is what you want to do or anything. I'm just saying this is what I did because I had enough. And I was just like, yeah, it's like, it really sucks, God, when people walk past the desk and they're just so rude and disrespectful, always talking to themselves like they're just crazy. It's just ridiculous. It's 6:30 in the morning, like they don't have a life. Like, I just went like he was going. So he's mumbling at the elevator. I'm mumbling at the desk. My new codified response for his racist behind is, that's what it's going to be. You are not going to walk past me every week, make it your habitual ritual to try to terrorize and condition and shape me to behave and respond to you in hopes that you are going to be nice to me. So you want to be like that? This is what it's going to be. I am ready. Like, I practice not like speaking directly to him. As a matter of fact, I practice. Like, when he walks, I'm going to just throw my hands in the air. Like, oh, God, like, Jesus Christ. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just do this. Because what it makes me feel is, like, I cannot put it into words, and I don't like it, and I'm tired of it. And then it's like, that's how I spend, you know what I mean? Like, I'm up. I still got to drive the hour home. Then I'm, like, feeling all funny. I got to wait till Thursday to tell you all about it. Like, it's done, you know? So this weekend, because I will be there, when he walks down at 6:30, we will do this, and I will let you all know what happens. And should anyone raise anything to me, it isn't like, you know, present something to me, y'all need to talk to him because it is not my job to be abused or terrorized. So the recorder button is ready. This is what is about to be. Moving on. So last Saturday, he comes down. There's a black man standing at the front desk. His dog, the elevator opens and his dog has to be restrained because he is just like losing his mind. Seeing this black man who's highly melanated and like 6'3", 300 pounds, you know, he's a nice-sized guy. And the dog is just, we're both just looking, and he's looking. He has on, he's such a weirdo. I should take a picture of him and post it. But maybe not, because that might be infringement of privacy. Anyway, so he wears like these shades. And so he has like a serious face as he's frowning at the black guy and I while his dog is losing his mind. And he keeps it, and I stare at him all the way from where I can see him, all the way to the front door. This is okay. So then, this is around like maybe 6:15 or 6:30. That's his schedule. So my relief comes at 7. So I was waiting for him to come back. Like, I was already ready to do the whole mumbling thing, throw my hands up, like, you know, like, we're not about to do this. You will not walk past his desk every morning that I'm here and terrorize me with your tackiness. Like, I'm just not for it. But my relief comes, and so I'm in the back room with the mail packages dealing with her, so I miss the opportunity. But so I hear her go, oh, good morning, you know, all extra, right? She's melanic, black female, victim of racism, BGQ, whatever. And I'm like, I peep my head to see who gets all this chipperness, and it's him. So that is one of the final things that had me resolve myself. Let me come on back down here. Resolve myself that is not going to happen to me, because she and I have even talked about his racist, terroristic behavior. You will not condition me to behave that way with you. Because, see, she didn't even have to do that. The most you're going to get at me is, like, silence. I'm not speaking to you, like, whatever. You are, like, not even, you don't even have a codification about your racism. We are not about to do that. I don't care. I don't like you. You don't like me. It's not for me, it's not personal, but I'm not doing that. Like, I hope you all can understand. I don't want to be conditioned, seasoned, made any more delectable than I've already been. And I'm tired of that. So, that was him. Then this other situation. So I guess I've had to resolve myself as well to having to, I guess, accept, constantly be uber aware of this sexual dynamic in outside of my house. Like, it really doesn't even matter where I go, you know, class, grocery store, gas station, any place. Like, I guess the minute I step out of my house, it is assumed that I am fodder for white male and females sexual depravity. So I'm in math class, which I love. and sitting down at the table. And it was only today, because I was like, well, what am I going to talk about during workplace racism? Like, what will I have to contribute? And then it came to me, and I was like, man, I must be really trying to avoid that if it didn't stick out. So there's a TA, white guy. And I don't know, you know, what hit. Well, I do know he's white, so he's probably having a fetish or just being racist and all that. But it didn't really, like, click. Like, I was really, my space has been being invaded. Let me cut to the case. Cut to the chase. Sitting down at the table, and I'm noticing that, like, if I need, you know, I want to ask a question, make sure I understand something. Like, everybody, most people on the phone are grown. You know, if I'm sitting down and somebody else is standing up, you already know what that's going to look like in terms of, like, body placement. And so that's what it is. And it's really close. So I'm going to have to deal with that tomorrow. Well, tomorrow I have a quiz, so that probably won't happen. But the next time it happens, which is when I will correct the behavior, I gave it some thought. I'm not going to do an email. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just correct the behavior the very next time it happens. I will check back in with you all on Thursday. What I'm going to say is, please don't stand that close. I think it's simple enough. I think, you know, hey, I have a question. He's going to come. I know he's already going to be close. And I'm going to be like, do you mind not being that closer? Please don't get that closer. Step back, or you're too close. Anything like that. Because I don't really, like, need to escalate something. For me at this point, it doesn't feel like I haven't been touched or anything. He's just really, really close. And I'm just going to say, can you please take a step back, not be so close? You're too close. As you can tell, I'm still kind of working it out. So I will keep practicing. Unfortunately, I thought I had overcome the sexual exploitation and harassment and abuse that I was feeling in my work environment, or all environments outside of the house, but apparently not. There was one that I guess I was just, like, not really trying to deal with, but it is exactly what it is, as I've shared. So I will deal with it, and I will check back in with folks on Thursday. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Right on, MA. I think that's perfect, succinct, right to the point. Could you not stand so close, or, you know, however, whatever, if you change it or what have you. But I think just what you said right there will work perfectly. I don't think it's anything incorrect about that. And I've heard in similar settings where other white people have made the same request and it did not cause a big uproar. The person just, you know, took a step over. Everybody has respect to everybody's boundaries. No problem. With the earlier incidents that you discussed, the mumbling white person or what have you, let us, I guess, know how that's resolved. I think that's correct black self-respect, him kind of barking at you, I guess, whatever the issue was, you know, well, call, mate, get it fixed, you know, like, that's not my responsibility. I think whites, I think in pretty much any situation, they look for that opportunity where they can talk down to and yell at a black, get plantational with you. Treat us like Toby. That was referenced earlier. They look for those opportunities. So any situation where they feel like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to be my nigger servant. You know, I can talk to you however I want you. Get it done right now. Run faster. You know, that sort of mentality. And just stopping that, you know, that I am not going to allow you to talk to me in that sort of way, that is just totally incorrect. It's not professional. And, you know, to just totally, because I think that was said too, to just kind of grooming us to accept that sort of treatment as normal. So they can just do that every day. We already know how we're supposed to respond to that or encourage that or what have you, we're not even going to get started with that. I think that's black self-respect as well. Other folks that we have not heard from our last 30 minutes, hopefully people will not wait till the final moment. People that we have not heard from, if you had either your own comment that you wanted to share, or if you had comments or questions about what's been discussed, you should speak up now.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. But hang tight, Mr. Steele, because I do see folks who have hands up. I don't know if they're just lollygagging a little bit or what the issue is. The people that we have not heard from at all, you should speak now.
Hello. May I be heard?
There we go. We'll get Mother in Detroit, and then we'll get our caller in Ohio.
Thanks, Gus. Good evening to all the callers and listeners. Just wanted to share my observations from the law firm that I work at. And I just wanted to thank you, Gus, for the program. When you first, I think when we first moved it to Thursdays, you really stressed how important it was to read our employee manuals. And so I've been just reading it on my downtime, just periodically, just making sure I'm aware of these so-called policies and procedures that I've noticed at the law firm do not apply to white people. And I say that because one of the white females that work in the office, first of all, our office hours are supposed to be, you can choose 7 to 3, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., 8 to 4, or 9 to 5. That is what was explained to me. That is what's in the policy book. And if you decide what you can stick to, and then that those are your hours. And so I just noticed the this white female, she first was working from 8 to 4. She would be late every single day, every day without fail. And so then she said, oh, I'm having a hard time. And she would always say it was because of her dog, and the dog is afraid of the when it rains at night. Oh, you know, the dog is afraid of the lightning and the thunder and all these, you know, excuses why she's late. So then she changed her hours from 9 to 5. Once again, late every day, absolutely every day. And anytime someone is late, they send an email throughout the entire office. This person is going to be late. This person will be in it within an hour or whatever. And so I would notice that her name would be on the email distribution every day. And so as time went on, now I sit right next to her, and again, late every day without fail. Now her hours were from, she would show up at like 11 o'clock. But for some reason, she's struggling to get in at 11 o'clock every day. And over the last, I guess, few weeks, she's been strolling in at about 12:30 every day. Now, usually if you're, you know, running late or whatever, you can kind of stay late to make up your hours. Well, I'm sure no one is in the office and she's skirting out of there without making her full 8 hours a day. It's just interesting because it clearly says in the policy book, you know, a violation of the tardiness and absenteeism policy may result in disciplinary action up to and including discharge. And it kind of got, you know, details how many you would have in order for this policy to result in the disciplinary action, and spells it out in the policy manual. She has clearly blown the minimum number, and I just find it interesting how the rules don't apply to her. I also noticed how she had her review with the attorney that she works for. She had a horrible review, and she was complaining about that. But now they're just going to transfer her to a different attorney. So instead of her being reprimanded, discharged, or just anything, she's getting the privilege of just switching attorneys. Because when she comes to work late every day, she doesn't just immediately start working. She's, you know, talking, socializing. Then she's a smoker, so she takes, I don't know how many smoke breaks a day. And I'm just making notation. I'm just like, wow, this is really interesting. The rules don't apply to white people. So I thought that was interesting. And then the only other thing I want to share, and I don't know if it's more appropriate for Saturday, let me know, but I did have a question, because when I'm going, when I do go out sometimes and I'm in a restaurant, I prefer to tip my waitress or waiter if it's a black person or a non-white person. I tend to be very generous as a tipper. However, I don't necessarily feel compelled to tip white waiters and waitresses. And I just, you know, listen to, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, the more I tip them or the way I tip them, this is helping white people. So I just wanted to know your opinion, or, you know, just any of the callers and listeners, like, how do you all handle tipping as it relates to just any kind of service that you receive from white people. Even like I was traveling over the last few days and, you know, you have people that's handling your luggage and, you know, giving you transportation, all these kind of things. And, you know, tipping is involved. But I noticed, you know, I make it a point to tip graciously for non-white people, black people in particular. So just kind of want to get thoughts on that.
How interesting. The tipping, I had to think about that. The first, or if other people were sharing their views, I had to think about if that would be better for Saturday or today. The first portion of it, though, I'm not stunned at all. It's one of the reasons why I think it's important to check policy and procedure, because I think sometimes you'll just be, you shouldn't be surprised, but it will definitely be a great reminder in terms of the power that white people have to just flagrantly violate policy and procedure all the time and not be subjected to any penalty, not fired. They get all their raises. Even if they do really mess up, at worst, they just get transferred. Like, it's, I mean, just to see that demonstrated, it, I think, very important reminder, as long as you, you know, don't get confused and think that you can do the same thing, which generally I think most black people don't get that confused, generally speaking. They're showing my dog. Wow. Because of my dog, I have to show up 4 hours late for work and then take a few smoke breaks before I even get in action. Wow. The caller in Ohio, you were going to comment? Were you with us? I thought I heard you simultaneously. It was another female caller? I thought it was our female caller in Ohio.
Hello, this is a caller in Missouri.
Oh, right on. Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Okay. Gus, thanks for taking my call. Hello to everyone. I just want to know what the codified response for how to maneuver in a... This is my first time calling, sorry. If you've been ever asked to be a part of a diversity advisory council, how would you approach that? And I'll mute my line.
What is a diversity advisory council? Ma'am, are you there? What is an diversity advisory council? What is that exactly? I hope she didn't hang up. I heard the question, but I have no idea what that is to even begin with the answering process. Are you still with us, ma'am? Dang. Well, if you got disconnected, if you can call back in the next 20 minutes, it would be great, because I have I couldn't even begin to answer that, because I have no idea what a diversity advisory council is or what you're supposed to do. I would need a lot of information before I could give any sort of suggestion or my view on being a part of that, because, you know, if how many white people are gonna, what are you supposed to do? Like, lots of questions about what this would entail to be involved with all of this. So if you can call back in to give us more detail, that would be helpful. Other folks that we have not heard from, do you have commentary? Oh, I think we might have her back. Ma'am, are you back with us?
I apologize. I accidentally hung up the phone. I was just nervous. Sorry. I just wanted to know, I believe it's pretty much just showcasing. I've listened to a lot of your programs, Gus, and I haven't read Mr. Fuller's book, but from what I can tell, to me, the whole student council is just about showcasing.
Okay. What is this group supposed to do? Are you all supposed to hang out and talk about race? Like, what's all this even about?
To be honest, it's supposed to... To me, it's very vague. They have a lot of non-white people and people who have identified themselves as you call it, anti-sexual. Like, for example, oh my God, in my office. And, you know what, this is, I don't want to cast this person on anybody for whatever they choose in their life. But, for instance, I am on the council with another woman in my office who has identified as transgender. So she was also on the diversity council. So I'm just very nervous as how to proceed.
I see. How many white people are on this council?
I would say, well, the diversity council lead. Oh my God, I think I've said too much. I feel like he's white.
Are you still there?
I am. I'm just very nervous about calling, and this is my first time calling. I'm sorry to everyone. I just wanted to find out what I should do, how I should proceed.
All right, on. Don't be nervous. Just victims. If it's nervous, if you think, you know, you might identify or identify someone or anything like that, you know, feel free to only disclose what you're comfortable with, and certainly we don't want any names or to identify anyone. But yeah, I'm just trying to get clarification so that I understand what this is all about, like what this is supposed to be for, who you're supposed to be working with, what the goal is. Those are all important questions that I would, you know, want to know up front before I choose to invest my time and energy in something. And just from what you told me, there doesn't seem to be a constructive reason to be involved with this voluntarily. Are you going to be compensated in some way for doing this?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, you haven't, it seems like this would be an easy no, you know, politely decline, because you haven't given one constructive thing about being involved in this project. Are there any constructive things that could happen as a result of this project?
Well, I was just wondering, you know, we talk about counter-racism, so I didn't know if there was a way that I could constructively move forward and, you know, just find out information that maybe I could, I don't know if I could use it somehow, but I'm, you know what, Gus, I'm just going to email you later with information.
Okay, that'll work. Once you, yeah. Whatever your thoughts on it, share, and we can share it on the program. Folks can give their input, or I can give my input once you get more details on it. Thank you for first time caller. Don't be nervous. Just us victims here. Just us victims. Other folks, have we missed anybody? Anybody who has a hand up that we have not heard from at all? It's like the last 15 minutes, so you should definitely speak now.
Can I respond to the lady that just spoke real quick?
I reckon.
Just really quick. If you're still on the line, if not, maybe you'll listen to the archive. I'm like Gus. I'm not really sure what that is, but I agree with Gus that it doesn't seem like there is anything constructive. And if it was going to be constructive, all of those kind of questions would have been easy to answer. The purpose of the diversity council or whatever is to promote, you know, whatever it's going to be, and then you'd be able to say it. If you don't know it, then there's really no point. It honestly doesn't sound like you really want to do it. That's always something too. Like, I always think, like, is this something I want to do? Like, do I have any kind of desire to do it? And if I don't, then I don't want to do it. It doesn't really sound like you want to do it. And if you don't want to do it, then you definitely don't have to do it. Now, if you're looking for like a way to, you know, respectfully or politely, respectfully and professionally decline, sometimes you can make up a lie. We talk about that sometimes, like, hey, I really have all of these things, even that could be true too. Like, I have all of these things that I have to do either at work, and I really don't want to devote any of my time or energy to that. That way I can make sure that all of my energy is devoted 100% to whatever it is that I do. If it's something that you have to like stay after work, oh, I have, you know, a lot going on outside of home, you know, things with friends, family. I picked up a new hobby that I have to devote to. I'm at the gym. I'm trying to, you know, I'm doing so many other things. I just cannot possibly squeeze this onto my plate. I thank you so much for thinking of me and thinking that I could be a contribution or whatever, but I'm sorry. I really don't want to commit to something I'm not going to be able to do. But please keep me informed. I would really love to hear what you all come up with. Thank you very much. You can put that in writing too. I think hopefully that answers your question a little bit, as to like how to get out of that. All right. That's it. Thanks.
Right. Any other folks we've missed totally has a hand up that has not been able to speak at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I've been trying to think up some instances that I was trying to share a little while ago. And the first one was there was this, we were in the research area, in the records area, and, you know, we usually have different customers come through, and there was a couple coming in to apply for a marriage license, and they brought their child with them. And, you know, the child, I guess he was very, it was a white child, and they were talking about, the ladies were talking about how, I guess, you know, mannerable and courteous the child was. And, you know, she was saying, you know what, he's gonna grow up to be, you know, very smart and things like that. And just to be concise, you know, she was just conversing with the child, and she was saying, like, how this is a black female, and she was saying, like, how the child was very, you know, I guess, quiet and didn't interrupt, and, you know, was, you know, like, somewhat overwhelming his own father and stuff. And she said, well, you know, you're going to be, you're very smart for a four-year-old. And something about, he was saying, well, you know, I'm already, I've been smart or whatever. So, you know, I guess they marked that under confidence or whatnot. But, you know, I was just thinking about how even, you know, as children, you know, they start learning early, you know, but this can pretty much be applied to all types of children. But, you know, when you're classified as white, you can definitely get the sense that you're in a different category. The next incident was there was an older white male, a white man that came into the area. He came there before, and he was always using the term history. And down here, you know, we've been talking about the Confederate flag statue or the Confederate soldier. And this guy has been going to the commission meetings or the community meetings or whatever. And recently they were talking about giving the 19 lynching victims a memorial, I guess, like at one of the old downtown courthouses. And I guess there was basically debating the term lynching. And he was telling the ladies in the area when I came back from break, you know, they was kind of having an intense conversation that, you know, about the term lynching, you know, meaning where they used to hang people. And, you know, the lady, black female, had to get up and eventually end up getting the customer to leave because he started talking about, you know, quote unquote things back in history. And they got into talking about slavery and stuff like that. And he was trying to twist or what they call revise, you know, revisionist history or whatever, saying, well, you know, they weren't exactly slaves. And he was using the term to help. I think that's what the word was. But she could never let it resurface again when I asked her about it. But this is, you know, this guy bringing up apparently, you know, what he was saying, history. And, you know, he didn't really get what he was coming at to get. Like, he didn't want any kind of record or any kind of printout or anything. I think he just came at to start up a conversation about that, which would eventually end up talking about racism. And the last incident was, I know I've mentioned about this young female before and how she likes to out another white woman about her own racism. And, you know, she added more to it, saying how, you know, how, well, we can't be off on the N day. You know, they constantly say N, you know, N word, or whatever. And so I was like, well, you know, I don't remember hearing that, you know, years ago, because I would have quietly remembered that someone was saying nigger or whatever. Well, she said it once, I think, but she was asking me a question about it. But, you know, she was saying how she kept using this term. And I said, well, you know, when you were around this, what did you say when you kept hearing this term being used? And it seemed like she kind of indirectly answered the question. There wasn't a sufficient enough answer. Something about, well, you know, she just kept saying it, and me and somebody else reported it. You know, it just didn't seem like it was satisfactory enough to me. And eventually she went on to expose on her own, I suspect, racism, where she said she mentioned that, you know, the old, or the, I guess the recent racist logic about there's a difference between, you know, ends and African-Americans, you know, basically niggers and African-Americans. So she was saying that she was telling two people in her department about that. And this white person walks in, and it just completely just redirects the conversation. So they got off that topic as soon as the white person came in. So she was saying, you know, it's the difference between somebody that's like you and somebody that's from the ghetto. So I didn't get a chance to ask my question. So that was when it was the end of the lunch period. So it was interesting how she was trying to pretty much, you know, put on racism on another white person. But, you know, she ended up practicing racism herself. And that's all of the incidents I have right now. And thank you for allowing me to share.
The slickness. I love it. I love it. It, even those whites, and we've had quite a few of those, I think, over the years where they come in and they'll try to, oh, yeah, they, meaning the other whites, they are racist. But I am your buddy, and I'm with you. And, you know, those crackers over there, they might even, you know, name call them and all of that. And, oh, yeah, you know, Helen said such and such. And Tim said such and such. And Rob said, you know, such and such. That's a great one. What do you do when Rob and Tim and Helen get to tell a nigger jokes and talk? What do you do? And see what they say. It's been my experience. They have a lot more difficulty answering that when it just goes back to them. But even those whites, you should be, particularly in the workplace, you should be especially careful around them, because it's been my experience that a lot of times they will win over all of the black people. All the black people will just adore, even that the black people are in conflict with each other, they will adore that white person and think that they're cool, and nobody suspects this white person because he comes and lets us know what they're saying and all of that. And that white person could just be over there spying and studying you all and reporting back to all the other folks. So you got to treat them like a race soldier too, in my view. Anybody that we missed, anybody who has a hand up that we have not heard from at all, because we have about less than 5 minutes. Anybody that we missed completely? Yes. Awesome. And I will get all of our emails in as well. This is our other young caller, Bay Area, the 16-year-old black female who wrote in. I thought she was actually going to be able to get her on the line. I was hoping we could get live commentary from her as well. Always great to hear from younger victims. But she did email me live during the program. Our other young listener, a high school male, he's in the Bay Area. He wrote and he said, my school had an assembly last Friday based on a serious topic. Someone who was a white female had the courage to say nigger during an argument with a black female. It was based on this particular situation, but it never came up during the assembly. Some of the black teachers had to explain why we should not even use this word in the first place due to its historical background. The black female made a confession saying that she did not handle the situation in a professional manner and she could have done better. There were other presenters that had to explain the use of the word through social media and how that represents fear itself. I found the assembly both helpful and unnecessary because I already knew some of this information before and I expected this to happen already. Awesome. So it was a little repetitive, and that's all he wanted to share, our young caller in the Bay Area. The only quick 2 points that I'll take from this, number one, you have a black female. Who's, you know, some, I don't know if she was made or asked or whatever, but she ends up reporting to the whole school or during this assembly. You know, I could have done a better job in responding to the situation. Did the racist white teen have to get up? And maybe I shouldn't have said nigger. Maybe I shouldn't have been a racist that day. Consistent, where white people are absolved, where they get to practice racism, even against children, and they get impunity. Oh, this is just a child, or they were ignorant. And this notion of ignorance, no white, by the time they're 16, they do not need an education. They do not need a remedial course on the word nigger. They got it. They've seen Quentin Tarantino films and the whole nut. They got it. they already aced that. They picked that up in like kindergarten. But it's that same notion that white people are ignorant. And if we just have enough seminars and meetings, that will solve the problem, which is not what this is at all. Unruly hound. With that, unless somebody has in something that they can get in 30 seconds, we will be all good. Anybody, anything they need to get in 30 seconds? I assume.
Yes, sir, can I be heard?
Oh, yes, sir. Feel free.
Just really quick. I think this was mentioned before about, I guess I can categorize this under victimization. Like, I can just be being courteous, you know, going to different areas of the building, and the response I get, you know, when I greet, you know, other victims or white people, and I compare that to the response just by, you know, one white person sitting by that same person, you know, I turn my head and I was walking out the door, I'm like, was that the same person's voice? I mean, because this sounds like extremely courteous, you know, when they were talking to the customer. And I just found that very just amazing, you know, how I just switched up like that, you know. But, you know, if I'm just happen to greet that same person, it was just like, oh, you know, who cares? It's just, you know, some black person. But that's all I wanted to point out. I know you've mentioned that before about the difference in, I guess, power, you know, and value. And that's all I had to mention.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can notice that in a lot of contexts, but especially on the job, the joy and chipperness when speaking fellow race soldiers acknowledging one another. And then when they see Toby and the help, what they have to say. Absolutely. I think psychic energy was mentioned before. That was from Vincent Woodard's The Delectable Negro Human Consumption and Homo Eroticism. In U.S. slave culture. We're not finishing it tomorrow, but we are getting close to ending the book. We should be finishing the chapter on the consumption of eating Nat Turner. We should be finishing that tomorrow. Moving on to chapter 6, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Compensatory call-in this Saturday, normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And we will have the Global Sunday Talk on Racism this Sunday, normal time. It's the early broadcast, right? That's the only time that we have a program. It'll be on at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific this Sunday, Global Sunday Talk. We should have our listeners, participants in from different parts of the UK. We even had some of our UK listeners. They reminded Gus T. wrote in saying, hey, we're supposed to be included in workplace racism. We're having problems with white folks on the job, too, over here. And I'm working on that. So I think next week there might even be the introduction. Some of our international folks, the experience that they're having with racism on the job, because that's why I included the segment from South Africa both this week and last week. World Law of Racism, White Supremacy on the Job. That said, thanks everyone for participating. Give us the update if you can email or call back in. Really appreciate everyone. Thank you so much for everyone not being a spectator who emailed or wrote in. Thanks to all the folks who emailed as well. You can continue to do that. If you know you can't participate via phone, just drop us an email and we'll share them on the live broadcast. Thanks again for everyone tuning in. I will encourage sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. The evidence shows that tobacco, alcohol, it has not thus far helped us solve the problem of racism, white supremacy. And in fact, a lot of times us being under the influence, that has greatly aided racists to continue dominating non-white people. Particularly, you do not want to be under the influence and have that be the day that we bump into Darren Wilson, Daniel Holtzclaw, any of these other race soldiers, I don't think being intoxicated is going to help you get through that situation. Keep your life intact. Keep yourself out of greater confinement so that you can get home safely, unraped, unshot, unchoked. Sobriety would be best. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.